because for some reason or another, Trump was more terrified of what the Senate was going after. And so Richard Burr, Republican of North Carolina, just opened a channel, a secret back channel to the White House and fed them information. Now, I don't know if this has happened in the Senate yet, but somebody on the Democratic side needs to demand that Richard Burr be removed post haste from the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. The only problem is any other Republican you put on there will probably do the same goddamn thing he did. But it was an act of abject betrayal of the principles of this country. He should be removed from that Senate committee position. And frankly, given his behavior, if we had a functioning Senate as opposed to a life support system for Donald goddamn Trump, he should be expelled from the Senate for that behavior. Any pushback?
No, I guess we got Scott. We got to get and Tracy and Rick. We got to get on the horn to Kamala Harris.
Yeah, she would be one to say it. If you're in Jersey, call Cory Booker.
Cory Booker on the
Intelligence Committee?
No, I'm talking about any of these Democrats who are running for president. They need to get out in front of this shit.
If I had it to do over again, I wouldn't have stayed up late to watch it, because what the fuck was I expecting? Bill Barr to waddle out, do his smoke screen for Trump, and then waddle back into where his hole, you know? What the hell was I expecting?
You and then stayed up late for something at 6:30 in the morning?
Yeah, I stayed up late to watch that crap when I should, because in doing so, I overslept and missed the first hour of today's horn program. Where are my values? And as I think about it, and hear the people chiming in, maybe the best approach is an all hands on deck, use everything we can approach, and not just wait for 2020. Go for impeachment. Go for general strike. Go for stamping stuff on the money. Get you a little rubber stamp that says, you know, fuck Trump, and stamp all your dollar bills because they get around. You know, maybe it's like do every possible thing that we can in the hope that something will work. Maybe that's the way to go. Maybe
I don't work. How do I strike?
I don't know. If there is a strike, go stand with them.
Solidarity.
Like what Obama said back early on. He said, if there's a strike, I'll put my comfortable shoes on and go and stand with the strikers.
All I ever knew is don't cross the picket line.
Well, that's a good one, too. And in fact, Elizabeth Warren gave exactly that message a few days ago.
I honored that belief a few times in my career.
You know what, though?
It was fun.
Speaking of Obama, I got an insight today with all these latest developments that it never really hit me full force. Do you remember when he was elected? I'll never forget that night in 2008 when Obama was elected and we were all thinking hope and change, new hope and stuff. Looking back on it and what has transpired thus far with Trump, I wonder if he was, for a while at least, the last chance for any meaningful change in this country. Because the other side, by and large, saw it not as new hope or last chance. They saw it as last straw, you know, that dark one in our White House. And Trump is evidence of that, really. I mean, that hit me full force today. That we're in an alien territory, friends. I don't think things, and I've been around a while, I don't think things have been quite as cattywampus and dire in this country as they are right now. That we're in a land of anything can happen.
Well, the disturbing part of it is this uncertainty. You don't know what's going to happen next week or the week after. I mean, anything could happen. Look at the New Zealand shootings. You know, I mean, it's like there's a new shooting or there's a new a revelation and nobody does anything about it. You know, that's what causes this sort of like anxiety.
Anybody want to field that one?
Well, I think Tracy's right, though. We are in really scary times. We're in very dire times, you know, and there's nothing we can do to get out of it. Well, I mean, it's like, I don't know what to say. I mean, I live in a blue state, but when I hear about the news from the South and back East, and there was a slew of crimes that were committed against, starting with the synagogue in Pittsburgh, but then there was two LGBT people who were murdered in Florida, you know, in a yoga center.
Oh, I got one for you. This is just in the last day or so. It was, let me make sure as of the date. It was around 8 o'clock yesterday evening when a maggot carrying gas cans was caught trying to get into St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City.
Oh, yeah, I read about that.
Yeah, I saw that.
Tracy's right. These are terrifying times.
Yeah, they are.
You know, if you live in the South and you go to a historically black church, you can't be sure that your church is going to be there next Sunday, because the man. Okay, so we're just going to take the opening part of the broadcast as read with the intro music and everything. There are a lot of buttons to push at the beginning of any given program, and I thought one of the settings had been changed, and it hadn't been changed, so I changed it. And now we should have a live program. So let me go back for those of you with the podcast, I apologize. But we're 7 minutes into the program, and the first 5 minutes of the program didn't go anywhere because, again, you know, wrong thing, button, setting, whatever. But this is the live broadcast for the 19th of April, 2019. And, again, thanks to our subscribers. Thank you very kindly indeed. I just feel real silly. But thank you very kindly to our subscribers for the 19th of the month. Thank you to Dave in Talibandiana. Thanks to Mike in Cascadia. Thanks to Joseph. Thanks to Dave. And thanks to Sharon. Thanks as well for helping us knock down the deficit last night to Libby and Kat in Ohio. And thanks very kindly to Otto Deschott for jumping in earlier this afternoon. The fundraising goal for the evening is $595 to finish the week. And if we can keep up with $200 and $200 on Monday and Tuesday, then we're done with April. And the total is $995, but we're just going for $595 this evening. 59 people at $10, never mind that half a person. Or, you know, 10 people at $59.50. Okay, let's get rid of that 52. So 10 people at 59, 59 people at 10, etc. And here in about 50 minutes or so, we'll fire up the extraordinary ordinary roundtable in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. That's another thing we missed because I punched the wrong button. Jesus, that gets. I annoy the daylights out of me sometimes. But, well, what happened was I have to change the input on the gizmo that streams to the servers.
And I hadn't changed the input because I was, well, because it's Friday and maybe, you know, end of the week. Anyway, but the program's live. And here we are. And Sparky over in the chat room tells me that we're good on the White Rose stream. Brother Deacon Asa tells me we're rocking and rolling on the head-on.live stream. So everything is now as it should be. And if you want to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, please feel free to do so. The more the merrier. Run on over to headon.live, and you'll see the Skype code there. It's a link, and it'll kick you right into the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. All you got to do is click on it. As long as you're signed up with Skype, and you'll be good to go. And, of course, a reminder, for those who can't work the Skype thingy, well, you can always jump in via the stress line, which is 844, toll-free, of course, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. See how it works? Yeah. All right, then. Now that I've completely screwed up the beginning of the program, you know, if I'm not here for a bit, who knows? But now that I've done that, let's go forward, shall we? We are a little over 24 hours since the release of the faked-up, frauded-up, rubed-up, ginned-up, dummied-up, not-exactly-Mueller report, such as it was, that pathetic attempt at an investigation that determined not to reach any conclusions, even from the outset. Remember, had Bob Mueller found evidence that in a meeting with, say, huggable, cuddleable, lovable Pootie, Donald Trump had offered up the firstborn female child of every family in America to Vladimir Putin. Remember, Robert Mueller would not have said that that constituted a crime, because he said so. Right. But the funny thing is, it's bothersome enough, and God, he was up early, the chlamydia Claudius was, and he was twooping for all he was worth. Somebody must have put some prunes in his late night Wendy's burger or something. And he was up and rage tweeting about the crazy Mueller report, the crazy Mueller report. You know, the same crazy Mueller report that he said exonerated him a week ago. Right. And he didn't even finish one tweet. He was so eaten up with rage tweeting that maybe he was having a rough time or... there's really no way of knowing. But he was rage twooping this morning. And he said, "Statements are made about me by certain people in the crazy Mueller report, in itself written by 18 angry Democrat Trump haters." You know, those 18 angry Democrat Trump haters who are all Republicans, who covered his ass for him, which are fabricated and totally untrue. Watch out for people that take so-called notes. Who take so-called notes. You know, what are you doing over there? Well, Mr. President, I'm a lawyer, and I take notes. Well, I had great lawyers. I mean, this is true. This is from the Mueller report. I had great lawyers. I had great, great lawyers, and they never took notes. Great lawyers like Roy Cohn. They didn't take notes. Oh, they took notes. They just waited till they were out of the room. Then they wrote it all down. But watch out for people that take so-called notes when the notes never existed until needed, because I never agreed to testify. It was not necessary for me to respond to statements made in the report about me, some of which are total bullshit and only given to make the other person look good or me to look bad. This was an illegally started hoax that should never have happened. I mean, this is one long twoop stream. Big, fat waste of time, energy, and money. And the funny thing is, 10 hours ago was the agreed to testify, the illegally started hoax, it never happened, dot, dot, dot. 10 hours ago, and then an hour ago, I guess after he came in off of the flog course. Big fat waste of time, energy, and money. $30 million to be exact. It is now finally time to turn the tables and bring justice to some very sick and dangerous people who have committed very serious crimes, perhaps even spying or treason. We get a capital S and a capital T for spying and treason. This should never happen again. Well, your presidency shouldn't have happened in the first place, dumbass. But whatever. This man truly is of diminished capacity. He's not at all well. I saw a photo of him at the golf course, and he's falling apart. He's just sort of expanding and falling. It's like he's sort of accordioning in on himself. It was pathetic. But it took him 10 hours to come up with the rest of the tweet. So, and 53 minutes ago, he was back up to his old tricks. The Washington Post and New York Times are, in my opinion, two of the most dishonest media outlets around. Truly the enemy of the people. He's trying to get somebody killed. These aren't dog whistles, as I said. These are dog horns. But the payback has begun. In particular, against Don McGahn, who fully cooperated with the Mueller dodge. And so, lo and behold, today, in a story from Politico, the Trump campaign has hired its own in-house attorney for its 2020 re-election bid and have shifted future business away from Jones Day, the law firm that has represented Trump since his first run for president. Instead, they hired Nathan Groff. He's formerly an RNC and Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker lawyer. And there's a direct line between that choice and the decision to dump McGahn's firm. You know, because, well, Stalin wannabes engage in Stalinist purges. Not that my heart's exactly breaking for Jones Day. This is a filthy outfit that was recently sued because of their nasty culture of misogyny in regard to women who work in that law firm. Yeah, let me see what's going on here. Okay, so that's just a beginning. But it's a pretty good beginning. What's this? Elbert in Rhode Island says, Bob, where did Sister Carol Baker get her cattle prod at? I'd like to obtain one. You can only buy one of those if you are an official fake religious organization like the Cathedral of Common Sense. I'm sorry, Elbert, but that's just how it goes. Steve in New York says, thank you. I have to say how thankful I am for the horn tonight. My year just seems to get worse. Worse. It is turning into annus horribilis. Well, we'll try to make it better, Steve. We really, really will. Steve continuing and says, I'm willing to allow this. Roy Cohn was gay. If pointing that out, homophobic as it might be, would completely smear and discredit Cohn. I'm all for it. Well, the problem is, Roy Cohn... And if you look up the phrase distinction without a difference, this is probably the poster child for it. Roy Cohn used to say, "I'm not gay. I just like to have sex with men." Boop! Yeah. So, but that's mighty generous of you, Steve. It really, really is. What I was thinking earlier today, the way things are going, and I know people have their various and sundry objections to him, but, well, I give it almost one to, I think you'd actually have to bet more money to win half the money, win your money back, and then a little sum, if you were to take these odds. I give it at about 1 to 2, somewhere in the fairly near future, that Trump makes some sort of homophobic slur against Pete Buttigieg. Just betting. I mean, you know, the race is not always to the swift nor the battle to the strong, but that's the way equity bets. And that's the smart money. What's this? Are we early? Stop telling us that the equipment worked the way you said it, not the way you wanted it, said it. Okay. Thank you, Lee. Thank you. Stop telling us how you screwed up, Bob. Yeah, Lee continues and says, the translators at Trump meetings took great notes. They were delicious. Yes, eating notes. Well, it was written on that same rice paper that they do, like, the little Thai spring rolls on. They're yummy. Steve responding to the bit about Roy Cohn, and I mean, it's true. Sex with men versus gay. The maggots won't know the difference. That's whom I'm targeting. Good. I don't know that I know the difference. So, well, yeah. I saw something earlier today. It was over at the Washington Post. And it's an op-ed. And it was so quickly produced that you wondered if, I couldn't help wondering if George Conway didn't have the thing in the can and ready to go. Headline, George Conway, it's from the op-ed pages of the Washington Post. George Conway, Trump is a cancer on the presidency. Congress should remove him. We can give the Mr. Obvious Award to George Conway, but at least someone is saying it. But it's the way that Conway gets to where he's going that sort of made me bark like a junkyard dog and run rabbits and eat dirt. Conway writes, "So it turns out that indeed, President Trump was not exonerated at all, and certainly not totally or completely, as he claimed. Special Counsel Robert S. Mueller III didn't reach a conclusion about whether Trump committed crimes of obstruction of justice, in part because, while a sitting president, Trump can't be prosecuted under longstanding Justice Department directives, and in part because of, quote-unquote, difficult issues raised by, quote, the president's actions and intent, unquote. And here's the sentence that kind of got all over me. Those difficult issues involve, among other things, the potentially tricky interplay between the criminal obstruction laws and the president's constitutional authority, and the difficulty in proving criminal intent beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, I parse that out to say that there's tricky interplay between criminal obstruction laws and his constitutional authority. That's one clause. The other clause is the difficulty in proving criminal intent beyond a reasonable doubt. That's where I started barking. Because proving criminal intent beyond a reasonable doubt happens every day in this country, probably thousands of times every day in this country. And judges tell juries things like, specific intent is seldom susceptible to direct proof. Instead, we judge intent, we determine intent, by the totality of the circumstances and the actions of the accused. If you think about it, it really does make sense. Because let's take, for instance, simple larceny. We'll make it grand larceny. A felony. One must prove that the accused deliberately and intentionally stole, took, and carried away the goods, value, or property of another of a certain value with intent to permanently deprive the true owner thereof. Seldom it is that you will find a burglar who will leave a note at the premises that say, "Dear burglary victim, I just took the family silver. I need you to understand that in taking the family silver, it was my intent, my specific intent, to permanently deprive you of the family silver. I won't be bringing it back." Signed, the burglar. I dare say that never happens. Instead, we have to judge the behavior of the burglar upon, say, the fact that he took the family silver and he hocked it at a local fence known for accepting and giving money for stolen merchandise. Thus, we judge his intent by the totality of the circumstances. Robert Mueller could have done this as well, but again, Robert Mueller did not have the guts or the integrity to do it. But moreover, George Conway, in his op-ed, gives away his privileged position inside the D.C. political class. Because juries all over this country have no problem whatsoever determining the intent of an accused, particularly if that accused has a high melanin content in his or her skin. They also have no difficulty determining the criminal intent of an accused if that accused is dirt poor, if that accused is unrepresented by counsel, if that accused is poorly educated, you get the idea. The only time you get lines about the difficulty in proving criminal intent beyond a reasonable doubt is when you're dealing with someone who has sufficient wealth and positional privilege for that to become a viable excuse. "Well, you know, we can't prove he intended to obstruct the investigation, even though he sat there and he said, 'Mother's gotta go, mother's gotta go.'" I mean, we can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he intended to obstruct the investigation just because he said, "I'm fucked." I mean, how's a jury supposed to sort that out? He didn't leave a note. He didn't write anything down. He never said, "I definitely intend to obstruct the investigation." Wait a minute. He did. He said it to Lester Holt. But America's answer to Inspector fucking Clouseau, Robert Mueller, couldn't see that because it was committed in plain sight. Jesus. But there's George Conway saying, "Well, yeah, yeah." But at least he says, "Oh, Congress needs to remove him." And good for you, George Conway, for saying that. George Conway could just as easily have said that the Easter Bunny needs to leave twice as many eggs this Sunday morning. And the likelihood of that happening might have been 10 times higher than the likelihood of Congress removing the cancer on the presidency. Would that it were not so. But it is so. I mean, for instance, one of the most damning things in the report, as far as I'm concerned, extending beyond Trump himself, is, as I noted, the information about Richard Burr of North Carolina. It's there in unredacted black and white. Richard Burr was a pipeline from inside the Senate Intelligence Committee directly to the Trump White House, telling them everything, every confidential thing that they were finding out about the FBI's investigation. As soon as Richard Burr knew it, the chairman of that committee, the White House, knew it. I specifically got up this morning and engaged in my filthy little habit, and then some. 4 solid hours. I was running at a rate of about 1 cup of decaf per hour. And 4 solid hours of live broadcasting. And not once was that mentioned. Even though on my filthy morning habit, they had Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut on, who is a member of the Senate Intel Committee. Could little Willie Geist be bothered to ask him about the fact that Burr leaked like a sieve? Nope. Wasn't there. Didn't happen. Kinda didn't make me feel real good. Not Paul McGann, Randy, in PA. Don McGann, former White House counsel. Going back to slurring Pete Buttigieg, note from Steve in New York. I think the odds are much higher than that. The thing is, it will be more covert, like, he's a San Francisco Democrat, California values, San Francisco values. Now, that's too subtle. I fully expect him just to use the full-on filthy. Monique says, he won't say it. He'll do a stereotypical hand gesture at one of his hate rallies. Ooh, that's not at all. That works. That could happen. You can see him doing it, can't you? You know, the same way that he shook and trembled, and jiggled, and mocked a man's disability when he was on the campaign trail. And everybody said, "Well, that should be the end of his, his presidential ambitions." But it wasn't, because the maggots, well, they kind of thought it was funny. Yeah. Note from Darlene in Connecticut: considering where we're at, Bob, considering what constitutes the new normal, I think it's a victory that Trump is feeling tormented and vexed by the Mueller report. It is all piling up. Raising his blood pressure and stress hormones, etc. Well, stress hormones, some kind of hormones. I mean, God damn, that picture of him today. Wow. P.S. Jones Day is where Don McGahn returned to work after leaving his job as White House counsel, as I mentioned to you a month or so ago. Trump switching law firms was a big fuck you to Don McGahn. Like I said, more fallout is coming from the Mueller report. I have no doubt. Meanwhile, Bill Barr, the prosecution, is trying to negotiate with the subpoena power of the Congress. And remember, he has an ace in his pocket, or up his sleeve. An ace with the names Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch and Brat Kavanaugh and Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas and Sammy Bad Breath Alito and John No Such Thing as Racism in America Anymore Roberts, all written on that ace. So he's trying to set up a dodge. Bill Barr has offered to let the Gang of Eight in Congress and a handful of other lawmakers of his choosing come and see a less redacted version of the faked-up, frauded-up, rubed-up, dummied-up, ginned-up, pathetic attempt at an investigation Mueller report. And the Democrats have said, nope, that's not acceptable. And they have declined his offer. Unfortunately, your proposed accommodation, which among other things would prohibit discussion of the full report, even with other committee members, is not acceptable, the Democrats said. I mean, one of the more hilarious things about that offer is that it includes letting Richard Burr, the chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, view the document. Which is kind of like letting every Republican view the document. Because Richard Burr is the Senate Republican equivalent of a malicious gossip. So the fight's on. Gerald Nadler has subpoenaed the Department of Justice. I heard some little reporter on the TV today saying that subpoena constituted a request for the unredacted full report. A request. No, goddammit. Somebody didn't have any high school Latin. Subpoena is actually two words. Sub poena. Under penalty. It is thus not a request, it is a command. And frankly, Bill Barr to prosecution, that creepy old fuck, resists it at his peril. Or at least once upon a time, it would have been at his peril. Interesting times, says Ron in Raleigh. Yesterday, the dimwit in chief had a phone call with the warlord that's attacking the capital of Libya in opposition to UN peacekeeping forces. Julius Geezer told the warlord that he was doing a great job and they had similar visions for the future of Libya. Ron in Raleigh says, to indulge in a little gimmick infringement of my own, we're all screwed, Bob. Meanwhile, Baltimore Bob with a note. At this point, with conviction in the Senate such as it is all but impossible, I still favor impeachment of President Pig. The goals would be more modest than removal from office. Impeachment would open up more documents to Congress. The public would be saturated with ever more revelations of the Pig's sordid life and career. Pelosi and the establishment Democrats are wrong to point to Republican losses after the Clinton impeachment. The only dirt Ken Starr could find on Clinton was his affair. The number of President Pig's offenses grows every day. The House would have enough material for impeachment hearings until Election Day. Prolonged hearings would serve the same purpose as conviction in the Senate, since they would help prevent the pig's reelection. The hearings could get into areas unexamined by Mueller, such as emoluments, money laundering, tax evasion, and sexual harassment. Impeachment would also serve notice that democracy and rule of law are worth defending, despite their defilement for 2+ years by President Pig. You know, there's a certain simple Zen elegance about referring to Trump as President Pig. It's kind of unfair to the pigs. But, well, let's think of it as a sort of mean, ignorant, feral pig. And I largely agree with what Baltimore Bob said. But, again, here's the other side of that coin. I already heard today, because I had to run an errand a little bit ago, and I was listening to National Petroleum Radio. For some reason or another, they decided to have, for about 10 minutes or so, some Republican congressman named McClintock on, and he filibustered the interview. The poor thing that was trying to that was trying to conduct it just let him walk all over her, and so they so National Petroleum Radio then contributed, whether they meant to or not, to the narrative that there's really nothing to all this. You know, and I know that there's something to it. If there was nothing to it, Mueller's job would have been all the easier. And they're falling back on terms like, well, it's a bunch of process crimes. Well, you can hang all the goddamned adjectives in front of the word crimes you want to, but the operative word is crimes. This particular goober cited Greg Gutfeld from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, who has declared genius-like, well, even if there's 10 times he done something, 10 times nothing is still nothing. And while the Congress, as Baltimore Bob points out, will be able to delve in much more widely, they'll have a much broader brief than Mueller did. Somewhere along the way, the multimillionaire for-profit media will have to do its job and not engage, and you know, asking the multimillionaire for-profit media to not engage in both-siderism is asking it to do the impossible. So imagine, if you will, 18 months of some story about something that comes out in a hearing, followed immediately by some reporter sticking a microphone in some guy in Iowa's face who has shit under his fingernails, who says, well, I don't really care. Donald Trump's a good man. He's trying to make America great again. And I just want America to be great, and I wish they'd leave that poor man alone and just let him make America great. Now, if you're down for that, then, as the saying goes, let's roll. But that is going to be what happens. And so, to the extent that, as Bob says, the public would be saturated with ever more revelations of the pig's sordid life and career, just remember, for every time one of those facts comes out, they'll go from Iowa down to, say, Louisiana Stan, and have some guy standing there with a frog's toe hanging out of his mouth, going, "Yeah, well, that's how them damn Democrats are. It don't matter what he does. They gonna holler something about him." And the RNC and the Trump campaign will, in the meantime, out fundraise the Democrats on every last sordid thing that's disclosed about Trump, probably by $2 or $3 to $1. I don't know if you saw the financial disclosures, but the Trump campaign has out-fundraised. I mean, you know, we talk about, ooh, look at all them $3 donations Bernie's a-getting. Hee-wee! Well, Trump's out-fundraised Bernie. He's out-fundraised Kamala. He's out-fundraised Beto. He's out-fundraised Mayor Pete. He's probably out-fundraised several of those candidates put together. But I'm leaning in the same direction Baltimore Bob is. The Constitution either controls this country and how it operates, or to hell with it. And we've taken the to hell with it approach a couple of times now. In the 80s, we said, oh, to hell with it, and let Ronnie Reagan get by. And then the people that were convicted of doing nefarious, vile, filthy, illegal, evil things, well, eventually, with the help of Bill Barr to prosecution, they got a pardon from George H.W. Bush right before they dropped the dime on him. And then, in the first half of this century, when we finally got majorities in both houses of Congress, the President of the United States said, in regard to an illegal war that caused the death of over a million innocent non-combatant Iraqis, that was put together on a tissue of the most blatant lies, a slam dunk of a prosecution or an impeachment, the President of the United States said, we need to look forward and not back. I suppose in the naive hope that by doing that, the Republicans would be a little bit nicer to him. How did that work out? No, really, how did it work out? We're told, for instance, and I realize that I'm being inconsistent here. As Charlie Brown once said, when Lucy accused him of being wishy-washy, he said, well, I'll show you. I'll be wishy one day and washy the next. So I'm in good company. But if the penalty for impeaching Donald Trump is being punished by the electorate, if the penalty for upholding a constitutional oath is being punished by the electorate, well, there's your choice. Which is more important, the Constitution or the electorate? And who knows? As Darlene indicated, you ramp up the pressure on him, and you don't know what he'll do. Because he's arguably committing fresh crimes, just talking about the crimes that he says he didn't commit. It's not like he stopped being a criminal because he was being investigated. He has never, is in his entire miserable, misbegotten, best part of him ran down his mama's leg life, ever stopped being a criminal just because someone was looking into whether he was a criminal. Ron and Raleigh says, funny, Paul McGann was the eighth actor to portray Doctor Who. Did I say Paul McGann? I thought I said Don, but whatevs. Maybe I did say Paul McGann. I meant Don McGann. These things happen. Ask about Richard Burr, says Steve in New York. Of course, that journalist wouldn't say that. How would he get invited to the correspondence dinner? Well, heavens to Murgatroyd.
Hehehehehehe.
I made reference to 4 hours of my filthy morning habit. Well, there's only 3 hours of it. I then stayed with it for another four to see if maybe they'd pick up the Richard Burr story with Stephanie Rule or something. But Brother Deacon A said, 4 solid hours of your filthy morning habit? Aren't you supposed to call your doctor if it goes on that long? Oh, if only. If only. Stephen New York says, subject line, enforcing a subpoena from Congress. Would enforcement be via the courts or the Capitol Police hauling him in? It would have to be by the courts. Then again, it's kind of a hybrid situation, because if he was, say, within the Capitol building, the Speaker could order the Sergeant of Arms of the House to order his apprehension and hold him in contempt until such time as he purged himself of his contempt. That's that ancient concept that a contemnor holds the keys to his own cell. All he has to do is behave appropriately and obey the law. So it's about 9 minutes before the hour. Yes, the reason, Steve is exactly right. The reason that George Conway used the term cancer on the presidency is because those were the words that John Dean used about the Nixon White House. And along the way, there's a certain, oh, by the way, quality to this. What does it mean if we do not impeach the president? It means that the vicious lawlessness continues. And while there's been no small amount of disgusting and shocking behavior from this criminal enterprise, sometimes stories pop that you look at and you go, this has meaning beyond simply how awful this administration is. Live video, or video shot live, has emerged of a group that calls themselves United Constitutional Patriots. This is in New Mexico. The group claims to be comprised of veterans and former police officers. And they went into the desert of southern New Mexico carrying guns a full-on vigilante group. And they went after some 300 migrants. Let's see if there's anything to be had out of the video or the audio.
Siete!
Siéntate! Siéntate! Paso! Paso! Siéntate! Siéntate!
Over here! Over here, guys! Over here!
Over here! Over here! Over here!
This is all shot by night, with lights, I guess, to make the video more visible. The vigilantes are the ones screaming into a bullhorn in Spanish. There are children, mothers, fathers. No one's armed.
I'm going to guess several hundred here, guys.
So we got about at least 200 jumped over by the bull. We're over here by camp.
Tell them we're at Camp Liberty.
All right, thank you. There, I got people around.
No, it's not a concert.
They're so proud of themselves, they spent more than a half an hour recording their criminal acts. And then, with force of arms, they drove these individuals, these people desperate to escape the violence of their own countries for which we're partially responsible, into the custody of ICE and Border Patrol. Interviewed by ABC 7 KVIA, one of the vigilantes, this may as well be the Klan, okay? These are Knight Riders. Said that the Border Patrol asked them to go to the U.S.-Mexico border in New Mexico. Thing is, when the same station reached out to the Border Patrol, they said, well, golly gee, a spokesperson did, I don't think that's really true. These Knight Riders have been camped out on the border between New Mexico and Chihuahua State in Mexico for months on end. They say they're going to stay there until Julius Caesar's goddamn wall gets built. Larry Mitchell Hopkins has been described as all in on conspiracy theories. Whatever it is that Trump says about the migrant groups moving northward, he swallows whole. He describes this as an invasion with no barrier. This is how they bum rush the border. This is how you get invaded. I promise you, if these people were armed and started shooting at us, a lot more people would take this more seriously and they'd call it an invasion. Unfortunately, because of the fact that they're not armed and they're coming in and invading us, it's not an invasion. I mean, that's kind of true. I mean, it's not an invasion. And they aren't armed. And if one of them had so much as a fucking slingshot, there would have been a goddamn massacre perpetrated by these lawful gun owners. This is the kind of thing that will be the fruit of doing nothing. Steve in New York says, I hate violence. I hate guns. But I'm ready to take up arms to protect the people Jesus said I'm supposed to protect. Well, this might be a good weekend, Steve, for me to remind you of something that he is alleged to have said, if he ever actually existed and is not a composite. Remember, when they came for him, Peter drew out his Glaudus, G-L-A-U-D-U-S, the Roman-style short sword. It's not like Peter was running around with a claymore. Hell, a Scottish claymore would be taller than Peter probably was. But he drew out his Glaudus and is said to have lopped off the ear of a Roman centurion. And that's one of those miracle moments when Yeshua picks up the ear and slaps it back on the Roman and it sticks. And he turns to Peter, and he says, put up thy sword into his place. For those that live by the sword shall die by the sword. Just a reminder from... Well, that's true. Monique, piercing the veil of these vigilantes' ignorance. So why don't these geniuses build the wall themselves for their master, out of their own pockets? Well, you know, that's what taxpayers are for. All right. So we got $5.95 to raise this evening. We're at zero through the first hour of the program. Let's run over and check in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and check. What's happening, Sparky? Sparky? Oh, I think he said be right back. Okay, well, we'll just move around the room. You there, Steve?
What's happening, Brother Bob?
Oh, you know, it's just another evening in paradise. The red buds are blooming, the trees are leafing out, and, yeah. You know, it's pouring the rain.
I see what you mean about Washington Journal. It was very stomach-turning just this morning.
Oh, you took one for the team today?
Yeah, Jesus. It's hard to believe there's that much ignorance out there. Well, it's scary that there's that much ignorance out there floating around.
Right, and see, that's when I was reading the note from Baltimore Bob, that's what we need to bear in mind. In the guise of being fair, they will give one-third of the country an equal voice to the two-thirds of us who want to keep having a constitution.
Yeah, they did. They didn't even have a dump button up until about 2-3 years ago. It was just the Wild West. People used to call in and do that Baba Louie thing all the time for what's that other shock jock?
Oh, thing? Howard Stern.
Yeah, and that went on at least 2 or 3 times a day. So they finally.
Yeah, that was just smartass. That was just smartassery.
Yeah.
But
it's gone off the rails, man.
Hey, anybody, where's that other audio coming from?
It sounds like it could be Duncan. It's not totally muted or might be up just a little bit.
Okay.
I was muted until just now.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm doing Uncle fine, John. Bob. How you doing? Hey, Steve.
How you doing, brother?
I'm hanging in there, bub. Fine Friday down here.
Always good to hear from you, my man.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Bubba. I had a little technical difficulties. Had to figure a button out here, but I finally got one.
Oh, yeah. I had a button problem at the beginning of the program. Don't feel bad.
There you go.
I got too many of the damn things, and I missed one this evening.
Well, I'm fine until I have to start messing with that mixer, and then I got to remember what button I'm supposed to push and which one I'm not. Hey, Rick, how you doing, buddy? I see you.
Doing good. How about you?
I'm doing, hanging in there, bub. That's all we can do.
You know, I have my camera turned on.
So. Yeah, you do.
Until until you've been doing it for about 15 years, what you need to do is write it all down in sort of like a flow chart form. And you even print out pictures if you have to. And then after about year 10, you can stop doing that. And then about year 15, you'll miss the first 7 minutes of your program because you forgot to change the setting on one of the things that you have to do. Yeah. Right?
I'm going to have to do something today. At the start of my video, you know, I do my rants on Friday, and I uploaded it. And the first part of it is me telling you that I'm tired. This is take 3. I'm wore out, you know. When I get into that rant, and you get like 8-9 minutes into the rant, and you flub it. You know, something you just didn't come out right, or, you know, you stumble, and it's like, oh, fuck it. I got to start all over again. Do it twice more. And before I got it done, but it's been one of them days, Bob. And then I came up here to upload the damn thing on YouTube and forgot to put the title on it and hit the little save changes button or it won't post. And so I just now did that. So I'm batting 1,000 today, buddy.
John Britovo, not having Good Friday, having sort of okay, so-so, mediocre, not so great Friday.
Yeah, it's not so great. Yeah.
Lawnmower Friday.
Got a flat tire on it. Got to fix that shit. Got my grass mowed, though, so that's the best thing I can say is the smell of fresh cut grass smells good.
Oh, I do love that, and we haven't been able to smell that for a while because it won't quit raining.
That's what I heard you say. It's raining up there.
Yeah, we're back to monsoon season.
Yeah. Piss and rain here too, Bob. Christ, man, it does never end, man.
Yeah, that front that's moving through y'all. We got the tail end of it. We didn't get any rain or anything, but we got some high winds out of it.
God, we got some vicious storms last night. Everybody all around me lost power, but I lucked out, you know.
Yeah, so you're living right. That's why. Just live right.
I guess. They're just geographically lucky for a change, you know.
Boy, howdy shit. Well, aren't we just in a fine shape in our country now? We're just rolling right along.
Our infrastructure's, it's all held together with spit and tar paper, you know.
Man, don't you know? There's a lot of shit that we could fix with the money we waste on politics.
Yeah.
Think of that.
Yeah, with the beginning. Yeah, that's very true, John. With the beginning of every political season, I think, wow, $2 billion is going to be sucked out of people's pockets who can't afford it.
Mm-mm.
$3 at a time, just $3.
But raise your taxes $3 more a pay period. Oh, no. I don't want no damn health care. That's going to take money out of my wallet.
Well, and not just that. You know, that $2 billion could actually do something. And it's particularly galling because every last penny of that shit, for the most part, is going into the pockets of right-wing-owned media who hate our fucking guts.
Yep. Yeah. They're not out to help you for shit. They're at it for the money, but I mean, that's all this.
One of these days, we might get reform of our political campaign finance system if we ever get to the point where we understand that our campaign finance system is a welfare system for rich people.
Today, I stressed that exact same point, except I expressed it in the fact that we got to take it's our responsibility as citizens and as guardians of liberty, baby, that's us, to take back this house because we can see what's in it. And after we take the House, I mean the Senate and the White House, that's when the work starts, baby. That's when we have to repair all the shit from the EPA all the way up to the tax fucking laws that allows every corporation to get away with bullshit. And then we need to fix this country. That's what we need to do. But we can't do all of that fixing the environment or fixing our laws to where they're equal justice for everybody because there's a lot of that shit ain't happening. And everything, like I said, to right down to our tax codes. This is bullshit. This country is supposed to be what? By the people, for the people, all that shit. You know, I ain't feeling it. I'm not feeling it.
We have to repair the Supreme Court and get rid of the United.
It comes a lot. Yes, citizens, you get the money out of politics, the money we waste on this shit. And you're right. We could do so much, baby. We could fix so much. We could, you know. Uh-oh. I heard Darth Vader.
That wasn't me.
Dick Cheney's here?
No, that's Count Dickula.
Count Dickula. Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Before I screw up, somebody's on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the group.
It's Count Dickula.
Oh, hey.
Hey, Count.
Hey, Jim, what's happening?
You, baby, you also what's happened. By the way, I'm the one who gave him the name Count Dickula.
Yes, you are. You are the I don't think that you want us calling you the father of Count Dickula, but progenitor.
I don't give a flying fuck what anybody calls me, Bob. You know that.
Well, you sound downright chipper. How are you?
Well, I'm here. I'll be here while I'm gone, and my warmest regards to your folks out there, and particularly John Britovo, and the one I love about John Britovo is Jenny. I just love Jenny. I wish I had three of them.
Well, I thank you very much. I just moved her from the front yard back to her pen, so we wouldn't have to put up with her hee-hawing down here right under this window while I was on the air just now.
Well, I think that's a worthy addition to the program. Well, you get on those steel-toed pumps of yours after this program and go out there and give her a hug for me, will you?
I surely will indeed. I will indeed. She loves that.
Love
she
your
loves
program,
the attention, baby.
I love your program, John. You really do. You get my fudge hard every time I hear it.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm stumbling through it, baby. I really am.
You do quite well. You really do.
Yeah. I didn't do too good today. It took me three tries today.
Jim, I think you done wounded Otto.
Well, I'm sorry, but you know. Just tell John the hell, even Frank Sinatra had to clear his throat.
There you go.
Did y'all hear that nasty joke about that?
No. Are we heading for
you
the
gutter?
Are we heading for the gutter, Jim?
Going to the gutter?
Wait
there
a minute.
Was an old...
Let me get my boots on.
Jokes need to be pre-approved. I've got a good one, though. A very good
go,
joke.
Go, Jim. Okay, Jim. Go there.
There was some drunk sitting in a bar, and he didn't have any money. And so the bartender told him, you know, get the hell out of here. I got to close up. And he said, well, I can fart the Star Spangled Banner.
Okay, where's that coming from?
Is that me?
I don't know.
No.
Is that Megan?
I thought somebody was beeping out all the bad words.
Yeah. Okay. So back to the joke. We're in medias res. Get on out of here. I got to close the bar, says the bartender.
That was a butt whistle.
And he said, look, he said, if you give me a couple more drinks, I could fart the Star Spangled Banner. And the bartender said, you're wrong. So he jumps upon the bar. He said, unfortunately, he loses control. And the bartender says, get out of here. Get out of here. You've messed up my bar, damn you. And he says, well, hey, man, Jim, I'm going to even Frank Sinatra got to clear his throat.
That's a nasty clear in there.
Yeah, that's a very tiny cowbell jingle, Jim.
Well, I don't.
For the effort, you know, but for the effort.
I've got more bells around me than Rudolph, so who gives a shit? But nonetheless, I want to ask you something. I actually hear somebody say that. Was it Trump, or were you just adding on to it, that Roy Cohn was a great lawyer?
Donald Trump. It's in the Mueller report. I had many great lawyers. I had many great lawyers. None of them ever took notes. Like Roy Cohn, he never took notes.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, when I used to go to New York back in the 80s, I told you this story. You know, I was in Studio 54. I had a friend who knew the owner and got us in. And I saw Roy Cohn. He was standing there right next to Donald Trump.
Well, it was Roy Cohn. See, it was Roy Cohn. It was Roy Cohn who taught Donald Trump how to walk and talk and act just like a blooming lady.
Yeah. You know, he was Studio 54 lawyer, too.
Out of lie,
of course, you know. But anyway, continue with the story. The friend of mine who got me in there, it's a friend of mine who worked for Paramount in New York City, and he was a film expert, and he was called on to assay Gloria Swanson's films that she had in her building there in New York, and all those films were nitrate-based. And he said when he looked at that scans of film, that she had enough nitrate-based film to completely level that building in New York. And they had to get a bomb squad to haul that film out of there because it was that dangerous. It was just corroded and just brown. But anyway, my friend John is the one who knew one of the owners of Studio 54, not Schrager, but the other one, the one who died. And so he got us in past the velvet rope and everything like that. And let me tell you something. You talk about a wild-ass place. It certainly is. It certainly was. And there will never be another like it. But, you know, it was a fun time, except when I saw Roy Cohn, and I said, oh, God. Bob, that's got to be the ugliest man I've ever seen in my life. You know, he had a nose job when he was a kid, but it got botched. But I'll say one more thing about Studio 54. There was a very handsome white haired man. He wore these big, he had these big, like black rimmed glasses. And I just happened to brush him on the shoulder. Of all people, it was Cary Grant.
Really? You know, you said white haired man and big black glasses. I thought you were going to say it was Andy Warhol, but that would fit.
No,
that's Cary Grant in his later years.
Yeah, and he was there, and I didn't know what to say. I was just speechless. I said, Mr. Grant, I have always admired you. And he said, just thank you. Thank you so much. He was so gracious. And then, of course, you know, the crowd moved in there like a tide coming in and out of wherever. But anyway, that's one of my experiences with some of the people I saw at that place. And back in those days, New York was a wild town, but I digress, as Sophia would say, old Golden Girls, and this is not one of those back in Sicily stories. I used to make loves of Benito Mussolini. Anyway, I just thought I would just share a few personal.
Absolutely, and you know what you point out about Roy Cohn is true, and as Texas T points out, Roy Cohn never took notes because he was recording everything. And
yeah, let me tell you, my buddy John said, I've got Cone's number. I said, why? He said, just call it. Just call it, Jim. You're not going to believe it. And he called his number. He said, hi, this is Roy Cone. And if you don't leave me a message, I'm going to come find you and I will get you. That's how he answered his answering machine.
And see, that had a very formative impression on the youngish Donald Trump. Trump's first association with Roy Cohn was back when he and his filthy old daddy got busted for racist rental practices in their properties. And had he gone to a smart lawyer, the smart lawyer would have said, look, all you got to do is enter into the consent decree and it's over. Instead, he wanted to be all butch, so he hires Roy Cohn. Roy Cohn starts a fight with the federal government and winds up getting his clients busted. Cost him a fortune.
Well, didn't that fool realize what type of history Roy Cohn had? And when he finally got kicked out of Washington after McCarthy drank himself to death, largely because of Roy Cohn, and after that thing with Joseph Wells, the attorney for the Army, who simply said to McCarthy, have you no sense of decency, you asshole?
At long last, sir, have you no shame?
You know, no shame.
No shit. And I mean, I'll tell you, for the group, I'm glad to join you tonight, but there's one thing that Roy Cohn, if any of you want to read a good book, it's called Citizen Cohn by Nicholas von Hoffman. And that will give you the definitive history of this maggot, Roy Cohn. And it teaches you who groomed our current Fuhrer. By the way, Fuhrer, tomorrow is the Fuhrer's birthday, for those of you who might want to know. Huh. April 20th, 1889.
So,
that's Uncle Adolph's birthday.
So Jim, are you back home, or are you? Or it sounds like the rehab's been going.
Home.
You are. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Okay. Well, 7 months. That's quite a vacation.
It is. So. It is. But Steve in New York says you sound great.
Well, so does he. I always love to hear Steve talk.
And Jim, my birthday's the 21st, so I've always had to wear that scar. I'm the guy that's born the day after Hitler. You know.
Oh, don't worry about that. Listen, did that Generac serve you well during the power outage?
Sir?
Yes, sir.
Were you asking me
don't you have a Generac? You said everybody's lights went out but yours?
Yeah.
But that was just dumb luck on your part. That wasn't a generator holding you up.
No, it was just dumb luck. No, I can't afford a generator. They're expensive, man. A nice one costs as much as a car. I don't need an extra car payment, you know.
They cost about a good
one. Then you
got to
maintain them yearly, and you got to have a source, you know, an underground natural gas tank or something. They're a pain in the ass.
Or an above ground propane tank, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to add about Hitler, you know, his the day he died is the 30th of April, so between his birthday and the 30th of April. Yeah, it's kind of amazing because his birthday and his death day are in the same month. So just a note of trivia.
So I guess all the real people who love Donald Trump are going to get on their golf course and get on their gross Mercedes and have the 19th hole with him and Ava. So there it is.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't think Hitler golfed. I don't think Hitler did anything in the last few years of the war. He just kind of hit it.
He was nuts.
You say he didn't. He did a lot, actually.
No, he did.
A lot of crystal meth.
Well, the British had a plan to kill him.
Mainlining the shit. He had his own doctor, man. It would mainline it for him.
Yeah,
you know?
He was getting shot up with cocaine and crystal meth. Yeah.
Oh yeah. As a matter of fact, the British had a plan to assassinate him by having a sharpshooter nail him at the Berghof. And then it was decided, we didn't need to kill him. Hell, the way he's conducting the war, he's our best ally. Leave him in power. And that was what Churchill and those decided to do.
Well, you know, he had a great quote after Czechoslovakia. He said, this is my last territorial conquest. And everybody laughed at that whenever he said that quote. It's like, oh, okay, whatever you say, buddy.
Well, speaking of dates, so your birthday is when, Steve?
It's actually on Easter Sunday this year, Bob. First time it's ever happened in my life.
Happy birthday!
Well, I didn't realize that you and Agnes were so close natally. Her birthday falls Monday.
No kidding. Oh, wow. She's the 22nd.
Small world.
Yeah. She'll be 28 and a half.
Happy birthday to
the
lovely Miss Agnes.
And let's move around the room a little bit and check in. I thought I saw Darlene. Darlene, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Howdy.
Hi. Happy birthday to Agnes.
I will tell her.
And, you know, I wanted to say she has a real talent for photography.
Doesn't she have just a lovely photographic eye?
She does, because that photo of you on Facebook with the black and white photo, the lighting and everything, she did.
I saw that.
That was incredible.
It was absolutely a great photo.
Yeah, and also the other one with the elephant. Well, she's what is it called? Pareidolia. Anyway, she saw that in the tree.
That's one of my favorites. Yeah, it was about a year ago. We were hiking up the trail to.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, it was a trail to the rim of the gorge. It's quite a climb, and as we were going across, there was a tree that had been uprooted in a storm. But and I just kind of blithered on by it, but she took one look at it and went, "Oh my God!" And when she, and then later she showed it, and it's amazing. It looks like a woolly mammoth or a mastodon or something frozen in wood.
I'm telling you, Bob, she could do a book. She could, I mean, I'm serious. She's that good, because I'm just blown away by some of the photos that you posted that she's taken. And I mean, National Geographic did something on trees recently. Somebody went around the world and they photographed some of the most famous trees in the world and made a book out of it. I mean, really, she has a talent for that. I thought I'd just mention that. So kudos to her.
Well, yeah. I'll tell her give me a second here. She said, oh, thank you. She's just a wall away.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're welcome. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a wall between the fabulous Horn Studio and the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, and she's on the other side of it.
I'm in the same boat. But
that's cool.
My political advisor is just right outside the door watching TV right now.
I love
same
it.
Thing.
I just
Hey, Bob, did you get
You're going to put a camera up, Bob? Bob, you need to put a camera up, buddy.
We're working on that. Right now, it's just not a camera-friendly space, but that's going to happen. If it quits raining, one of the plans is take everything in the studio out into the yard. You know, it's not unusual for hillbillies to do that. And then put it back piece by piece.
There you go. Rearrange everything.
Yeah. Darlene, you were asking what? Did I get what?
Did you get my email about Johanna Hayes?
Yes, I did. I did.
Okay, good. Okay, good. All right. You know what I'm talking about then. Okay. So I did reach out to her yesterday evening. They had one of those phone-in town halls. And I tried to get live with her, but it didn't work. But anyway, I left a lengthy message about the AIC Act. So hopefully you or Bo Webb can follow up with her, because there is no reason why she shouldn't be a sponsor and vote for it, because she talks up how, she's supporting the Green New Deal and all of that. So anyway, I explained that in the email to you.
Yeah, I did see that, and I really appreciate it. You did a great job, and you know, anybody out there who gets an opportunity to get on like a telephone town hall with your member of the your house member or whatever, feel free to mention 2050 HR 2050.
I said that.
And get them and make them aware that you as a constituent want to see them sign on as a co-sponsor of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act.
Exactly, and it's so easy because the AIC Act website is so well written. It's very easy to just read right from the website, you know, exactly what the 2050 resolution states, and, you know, and then, of course, embellish in terms of trying to gear it towards what your particular Congress critter, you know, is what their area of interest is, because for Johanna Hayes, it's education and so on, so...
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, where Appalachia is concerned, you know, we badly need to focus on education. We need to focus on jobs that aren't part of a mono economy. But you can't really do any of those things until you stop poisoning the people here, because people have a hard time building a new and just and sustainable future if they have to struggle even to breathe.
Well, it's also about educating people about what's going on in Appalachia, because a lot of people don't know about it. Even though you've been talking about it for years, it's not well known what's happening. My own assistant here in the office was stunned when she was listening, because I had the House Natural Resources Committee hearing on at the time we were working, and she did not have any idea that was going on in Appalachia. Even though I've been mentioning it to her over the years, she had to actually hear the hearing in order to learn from that. So it's that in and of itself is educating people. So that's where I felt that was kind of keyed into what Johanna Hayes is interested in as well. And children, because what was his name in your hearing there? Was it Shoup? He was the gentleman from Kentucky who talked about the two little boys that were sleeping in their bed at night. And one of the boulders had dislodged from one of the mountaintops that had been decimated by the coal mining and had rolled down the mountain and smashed into the house and killed one of the little boys. I mentioned that in my spiel to her. So, I mean, things like that, you know, I would think would matter to somebody who is educating children and cares about children. So.
Yeah, that was Jeremy Davidson, and there was so much more that didn't get mentioned in the hearing. That little guy, the most that the coal company faced was a $15,000 fine for murdering him.
Oh, my gosh.
And when that was imposed upon them, they fought it until it was withdrawn.
But of course.
Oh, well, mm-hmm. That's
horrible.
Yeah. And the family since the family was encouraged by the coal company, they settled. They paid him some money through a civil process quietly, forbade them to ever speak about it again. and told them to not let the sun set on them in Wise County, Virginia. Yeah.
Yeah.
So much we have to change, Bob.
Yeah, there is. There is. And one of the things, I don't have a physical list. I haven't written all this down. But I, as difficult as it is, I think we really need to think about amending the Constitution on a number of fronts. We need to amend the Constitution to make clear that that the bought and paid for decision in Citizens United is overturned constitutionally, that money is not speech. We need to repeal the Electoral College via a constitutional amendment.
The list.
We probably should figure out a way to create an independent council constitutionally, so that we never get the broad dichotomous difference that we had between Ken Starr and Mueller.
Right.
Because just think about it. If Ken Starr had been operating the way Mueller had to, or perceived he had to, mm-hmm. he never would have been able to look into a stained blue dress. Because see, Ken Starr just went back to a prearranged right wing judge in D.C. and said, "Hey, I want to look into his sex life. Can I do that? I mean, granted, I was appointed to look into a failed land deal in Arkansas, but it really turns me on to think about Bill Clinton having sex. So can I look into his sex life, boss?" And the judge said, "Sure. Well, hell yeah, sure, go
hell
right
yeah,
ahead.
Got any pictures? Bring them back here."
I mean, that's literally what happened.
Yeah, it's that list you're talking about, and why it's so critical that we get super majorities in the Senate, maintain the one in the House, and get the presidency, and start pushing
yes.
a list of things that need to be done. Right, John?
Yes, ma'am. Not push, shove it. Shove it. That's what they do to us, shove it up their ass. I don't give a shit how much they bitch. Take control and take our agenda forward. Because all the things we're discussing right now, that's the shit that needs to be fixed, and it ain't going to be fixed as long as there's a Republican up there at all.
Yes, statehood for Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C.
Yes.
They're here.
Yeah.
Yes. There is a lot of things that have been held back by petty bullshit that just, you know, forces this country into a stalemate. Well, I don't want to be stalemate anymore. I want to be excited again.
Yeah. Petty bullshit.
I want to do some work on that more perfect union that they talk about in the preamble to the Constitution.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Mm-mm-mm. Whether this nation so dedicated can long endure, Bob. That's the question that we're still asking ourselves.
Amen, Brother Lincoln. Amen.
It is. Yeah, I love the guy. I played him in school.
I did too.
Excited. Did you?
Yes, I did. Fifth grade.
Four scores 7 years ago.
I recited, damn straight, I recited the Gettysburg Address.
Yes, sir. And I love it. And it's one of the most powerful speeches that, you know, when you take the time to learn that, you know, especially when you're the guy, you know, you're sitting up there with the beard on and all that shit. Yeah. And it you learn it then, but it the longer it stays with you, the more it digs into your heart.
It does.
Have any of you watched the movie Henry Fonda, Young Mr. Lincoln? There's a great trial scene in that shows Lincoln's wit. It's brilliant. It's a good film. You know, it's kind of clunky, but it's. I think John Ford directed it.
Well, I loved the Steven Spielberg Lincoln movie, especially those moments when his better educated, more well heeled contemporaries. He'll start telling some story, and you can see the eyes roll all around the cabinet table. And at one point in time, he says, "Did I ever tell you about?" And he said, "No, Mr. President." But he finishes one story, and one member of the cabinet, I think it's Stanton, says, "I have no idea what that even means."
I like it when he said, "If you give the people the truth, they'll know what to do with it. If you give them the truth and beer." That's a quote. That's what the man said. He said, "Give them the truth and the beer, and they'll make a good decision.
But didn't Lincoln have a famous quote, you can fool all the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time? Something like that. Maybe I
misquoted. You can fool some of the people all the time and all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all of the time.
Right. Thank you.
I thought that was lyrics from a Bob Marley song, y'all.
George W. Bush screwed it up big time.
That's true. That's true. But then again, he screwed up a lyric from The Who.
Right.
Fool me once, won't get fooled again.
Oh my God.
Well, Bush should be in an anti-drug commercial, just talking. You know, this is what drugs do to you.
Bush should be sharing a prison in The Hague.
Trump was the best thing.
Yeah, I know. That too, with his friend Dicula.
Oh God.
Yeah, roomies forever.
Yeah. How many people do they wind up murdering? Over a million, or help fetch murder of?
They're still doing it. They're still doing it.
Oh, I know. It's a perpetual war.
It's called the Spartan rule. When they frack down here, they're killing everybody, baby. Yeah. We can't tell you what's in that fluid because it's a secret.
But it's the last phase of capitalism. Last phase of capitalism is to find new markets. And one of the markets is war. I don't want to quote V.I. Lenin, but he talked about the withering of the state, and he talked about the last stage of imperialism is war, or last stage of capitalism is war. So as long as we have capitalism, we're going to have these war, these crazy war people, imperialists in the White House or in Congress.
We were warned.
It's true.
One of the earliest and most vicious manifestations of capitalism was the slave trade, plain and simple.
It's true, yeah.
Well, and in a way, they're still practicing that today. Keep them poor and hungry, needing a job, they'll work their ass off for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The slave trade, the opium trade, mercantilist molasses triangle. It's all based on oppression, and
just go from opium to opioids.
Well, and here we are. Right.
And here we are.
Full circle.
Let's see. I think we've heard from everybody but Tracy.
Tracy looks like she's signed off, or that she's there, but her...
She's there, but her mic is off.
She's muted.
I've been listening.
There she is. Hi, Tracy.
I'm here now.
Tracy. Hey.
Hello, Tracy.
How's everybody doing?
Doing fine.
Good.
Glad to hear from you.
I had to do a
Bob
sleep study last night.
Oh, how'd that go?
Well, it was pretty cool. I mean, I have no idea what the results are because they don't tell you. It takes like a week for them to get the results. I mean, they have to, you know, read all this stuff from the monitors, and plus they have to watch the video and all that and whatnot and so forth. But the guy that did the test, he was so cool. He immigrated from England. He's from Liverpool, and we got on. I was just talking about it in generalities because that's what I do when it comes to just how, you know. And I said something about the state of the world or the country that we're living in, and he's like, "Well, if we didn't have fucking Trump as president, maybe it wouldn't be so bad." I'm like, "Oh." I mean, so we went on, and he got to the point where he's like, okay, I gotta go because see, you're supposed to be sleeping, and you can't sleep if we're in here talking. I'm like, yeah, no, that could be problematic. But he told me about this horrible instance in British history before they banned the slave trade, and I sent Bob the story about the slave trip ship called the Zong, and it was out of Liverpool, and because, you know, the crew were idiots and they went the wrong direction or whatever, so they ran out. They were running low on supplies, and so they made the decision to dump all the slaves overboard, you know, to save their own skin. But it gets better because then they filed an insurance claim because, you know, they were cargo. You know, and it's like, and the first thing, the insurance company's like, fuck you, no. And
it went back and forth. But yeah, they actually filed it. They made the conscious decision because they knew if they got rid of all the cargo, they could file an insurance claim.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, oh my God. And then he was telling me, and so I just like, wow. And so then he was telling me about how the last Confederate flag to ever fly was in Liverpool at the Confederate embassy there. And they said that as soon as they got, as soon as they got word about that the war was over, that shit came down. they closed the embassy and all that. And, there was just so much stuff. You know what else he told me about? Because we were talking about, healthcare, and he was talking about, because we talked about, 0666 himself, because he's talking about Thatcher, and then, of course, I'm talking about Reagan. And so, yeah, they were pals to the bitter end. But he said that the one thing, because I was talking about how Reagan did nothing about the AIDS epidemic in this country. And he's like, now the one thing, and I guess sometime in the 80s, he didn't remember exactly when, but do you know that the BBC only for 24 hours, that's all they showed was to educate the country about HIV and AIDS. So that the entire country knew exactly what HIV was, what AIDS was, and what it wasn't. That's all they showed on BBC for 24 hours. They're like, we're going to educate our country about what AIDS is and HIV so we could do something about it so people will be aware. Could you imagine them doing something like that?
Who would have ever thought?
Well, see, that's because they don't have any freedom over there in England.
All right.
I wonder if that had to do with Princess Diana because she made it, she put it on the map, so to speak, because that was around the time she was doing that, wasn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just wondering because maybe that gave it the quote-unquote legitimacy,
Talking about the BBC, it reminds me of something that I don't know that it's unique to Britain, but we certainly don't have it here. The way I don't know if it's set up this way now, but for a long time it was set up that everybody in Great Britain who had a TV or a radio, I believe, had to pay an annual license fee.
That exists to this day.
Good. Well, that's what funded the BBC. Can you imagine having something like that in this country? Oh, sure. They'd never get over it. They'd be throwing they'd be throwing radios and TVs into Boston Harbor,
But yet, still, you pay $200 a month just to fucking watch TV now, right?
Yeah, well,
It's the same thing, only with a different purpose, and the money goes to a different place.
Right.
But I'm sorry, you just raised up a lovely, hilarious little visual of a whole bunch of maggots out there getting out the Elvis gun and the peanut butter and banana sandwich and shooting the TV to own the libs.
Yeah.
Right. And you paid for this, so, go ahead and shoot it. We already got the money, Samsung, Sony, whomever.
Make it worse, Bob, in this country, the monthly or annual payment goes to the cable company, okay? But then the cable company turns around and donates it to right-wing politicians, crazy politicians.
Precisely.
Who continue to misalign the playing field. There's no fucking end to it.
Right. That's what I was talking about a little bit ago when I said that the campaign finance system is a wealth redistribution system whereby we redistribute it upward to people that hate everything that you and I stand for.
Mm-hmm. So there you go.
There you go.
It's
And meanwhile, and this sounds really selfish, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. Meanwhile, to finish the week, we're at $595. We started the program at $595. We're still at $595. And, wouldn't it be hilarious if you tuned in to, say, My Filthy Morning Habit or Washington Journal, and they were saying, well, we need to – wait a minute, that's NPR. Never mind. But that's where we are. We're at $595 to finish the week and a grand total of $995 to finish the month. And then we got fundraising free radio to the end of April.
Well, I'll throw a $100 challenge, Bob.
What?
I'll throw in a $100 challenge, Bob.
Wow. Please.
Courtesy of the sorority of Leans, yes.
Yes.
That is beautiful. Thank you.
Nice. Thank you, Darlene. And so if your challenge gets met, that
would be good.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. That takes a big bite out of it, and we are that much closer. Thank you, Darlene. You're wonderful.
There. Somebody else needs to jump in there.
Hey,
keep
Tracy,
this thing going, baby.
Tracy, were you able to fall asleep okay, or are you like, well, Rob, like me, I'd be too self-conscious?
here is the problem, because it's like, I have such horrible issues with my sleep. It did take me a while to fall asleep, and I sleep fitfully. Regardless of where I am, I wake up, can't go back to sleep, and then I fall asleep again. One of the reasons why they think I have sleep apnea is because I'm always so exhausted. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like, if I sit still long enough, I fall asleep. Like, you know, like a lot of times when I'm listening to the show, because I'm listening to you guys in the car on my Bluetooth, I'm parked, so don't freak. But, you know, I fall asleep. I hear you guys, and then I fall asleep. And then if I hear my name, and I'm like, oh, okay, I wake up. But it's horrible. I'm always tired. You know, I'm constantly napping throughout the day. It was like they had the questionnaire as to, do you fall asleep? You know, they have a scale on, you know, do you fall asleep during this? Do you wake up exhausted? Do you do this? Do you do that? Are you prone to fall asleep if you're sitting in the car, you know, at a stop sign? I mean, it was just all these things. But, I've been suffering with this forever. But what prompted my doctor... I told Bob what was going on. I hadn't told anybody else beside my wife and my son, was that they think that I have I'm having cardiac failure. What happened? I went to the doctor. I went to my vascular surgeon. You know, remember a few years back, I was having issues with the veins in my legs, and I was having swelling and pain. So I was getting debridements, and they were doing okay, and then the swelling started again. So I went for my 6-month follow-up on Wednesday, and they did the ultrasound on my legs, and they're like, why do you have, you know, your veins are fine, but you have a shit ton of edema and fluids in your legs and your ankles. I mean, my legs, I look like I'm walking on elephant trunks right now. So he's like, I need you to go see your doctor. And so I went to my doctor, and he's like, no, this is not cool. So he personally called the cardiologist on Monday, and the cardiologist wasn't in the office, but he called him on his personal phone. And then he called his office, and I went directly from my doctor's office to the cardiologist. They ran an EKG. Which is fine. Mm-hmm. Yep. They, you know, listen to my heart. Everything is fine, but it's this edema they're worried about. So that's why, because a part of something with heart failure, is apnea, sleep apnea. So just so happens I got lucky yesterday, because the people called me to make an appointment, and they had an opening yesterday. And so they're like, well, can you come in tonight? I'm like, shit, yeah. It was, the place was like 10 minutes from my house. And I went there. And then on Thursday, whenever the 25th is, I'm going in for echocardiogram. And if they still can't figure it out, then they're going to probably do a CAT scan. So,
of course. You already had a stress test and all that.
No. They're doing. You know. Thank God again, I have insurance, and so.
Well, that'll tell a lot.
You know, so stressed. I mean, because I'm short of. I mean, I went to lunch, and I just walking from my car from the restaurant to my car, and I was out of breath. If I stand too long, I'm suffering. I mean, and I know a lot of it has to do with my weight.
How's your blood pressure?
My blood pressure actually is fine.
Yeah, well, that's the thing to monitor every morning.
Yeah, if it's too low, that'll make you tired. I've had mine just tank.
My blood pressure is actually fine. I'm not, you know, I'm not pre-diabetic. And considering how much I weigh is shocking. Mm-hmm. But
with chest X-ray, Tracy, did that reveal anything? Or
I haven't had a chest X-ray yet. I said, there's going to be a battery of tests.
Yeah, they'll be looking for an enlarged heart. I doubt that you have one, but I'm just letting you know.
No, I don't think if I did, I think I would be doing much worse than I am.
And if it's that bad to where you're tired, your doctor can usually hear it with a stethoscope. That's when they go around your back. That's what they're listening
to. Well, that's what exactly. And when he listened to me, he didn't hear any fluid in my lungs or anything like that. But so the steps are cardiologist and then a because then they're going to check my kidneys to make sure. So that means I'm going to have to go to a nephrologist and then even a rheumatologist because since I have pain in my joints and the swelling is in my ankles and my hands and stuff. So they're like, you know, so there's a list of doctors that I'm going to have to go to because as the vascular surgeon said, you might have. What's going on is that there's a whole bunch of things going on at the same time.
You could have an autoimmune disease thing called
lupus or something like that. So there's a whole, you know.
Did you take any medication for your heart, like lisinopril or you take statins?
No beta blockers.
Beta blockers yet. No, because it was what they were freaking out about slightly. ACE inhibitors. A diuretic and the diuretic did nothing. Even with the diuretic, I was still swollen.
Yeah, it made you pee. Probably had to pee every 10 minutes. So
no, and that's the thing. I did not.
That ain't good. Tracy, you're taking a diuretic and you're not peeing. There's a problem.
Well, if I could jump in here, I'm not a doctor, and we're not doctors, and none of us play one on the radio.
No, I'm not. I'm just going by past.
But there's a couple of things that leap out at me. If you took a diuretic and you are retaining fluid and the diuretic didn't pull any of it off and didn't make you pee, it seems like, just based on a differential basis, you might somewhere along the way, they're probably going to ship you off to a nephrologist.
Yep, that's what they said.
For a good look at your kidneys. But as to, and this is anecdotal, but it's based on personal experience. I guess that's what anecdotal means.
Is that what it means?
Fuck if I know. Sometimes I just masturbate a word into a sentence, whether I know what it means or not.
Go. Throw it in there.
That's I guess non anecdotal, Bob.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing that I've discovered. I have to read something to go to sleep, and I sympathize with everything you're saying because two things happen to me at night. When I finally do go to sleep, I spend the night working my ass off. Watching my fucking dreams drives me batshit. I feel like one of those fuckers in the cave allegory by Plato. You know, it's like my head's strapped in place and I got no choice but to watch what's on the screen. And sometimes I wake up more exhausted than when I went to sleep.
Yep.
The other thing is I run rabbits in my sleep. We moved from a full size bed to a queen size bed. And I'm still chasing Agnes all over the bed in my sleep. And I wake up in the morning, and she's over in the, like, top right corner of the bed, huddled up like one of those frozen fucking Incan mummies, okay?
you're all sprawled out all over the bed.
Right, yeah. But I've noticed one thing.
Upside down.
If I try to go to sleep, like, you know, we watch something every night before bed.
Yep.
And if I try to go to sleep immediately after doing that, my brain's still going. It's literally overstimulated by the video.
Yeah. Right.
And here's the weird part. If I say, okay, well, I'm going to read a little bit first, and I read off of a screen, the same phenomenon kind of happens. But I'm lucky in that I've got a little stack of books, many of which have been provided to me kindly by members of the Horn Family Community Congregation. And if I pick up one of those and open to the bookmark and I read that physical, in my hands, hard copy book for a little bit, It's a totally different experience.
Yep. It's like taking an Ambien.
It's meditative.
So the last thing, Bob, the last thing you want to do at bedtime is read off a screen, because light affects your, I think it's your pineal gland.
Yeah.
Which has to do with the melatonin.
Melatonin, exactly, Scott.
Yeah. Right. And Tracy, have you ever been a cigarette smoker?
No.
Good. Okay.
But I have to deal with the secondhand smoke of Jan.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about your dental health? Because they're finding that bad dental conditions,
the bacteria
can leach into your heart.
Have you had a lot of root canals?
Mm-mm. But you know what? It's been a while since I've been to the dentist, and I need to take my ass to the dentist.
And I'm sorry, but I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's right. The other thing I thought about with taking the diuretic but not, you know, throwing off any of that water, did you ever have surgery and they, like, left a sponge inside of you? Or?
The only surgery that I've ever had. No. The only surgery
accidentally,
that I've ever had was... No, I had brain surgery, and if they left the sponge in there, I think I would have noticed that by now.
You got a headache or something by now.
So
I don't know. You know a lot. You might be soaking up all that information, Tracy.
Ah, good one. No, I had brain surgery.
I think that deserves a cowbell there, Bob. Yeah. Sponge, soaking up.
Thank you, John.
I had brain surgery August of 2012. And, I haven't had any issues since. So,
well, Tracy, let me tell you something. I was worried about you because right here, I'm looking at my notepad that I scribble on and have all my show notes and all that stuff that I'm supposed to keep in my head. And I have a little squared off block here and it says Tracy. And I jotted down a bunch of stuff. I was going to, because what you said is, I think it was yesterday, that we couldn't wait. That you were anxious. Yeah. We can't wait till 2020. You know.
No, I can't.
That he has to go, and the anxieties that you felt about that. Well, when you said that, that stuck with me, and I have it in my show notes because at the right moment I'm going to whip that out. I may not call you out by name if you don't want me to, but
you can call me out by name. I don't give a fuck.
Well, good. I have it right there. She's a black gay cab driver out in Los Angeles, and what she says bothers me, and it did. That's why I wrote it down. And there's a lot of people in this country that I'm sure feel just like you. We can't wait. This every day, this asshole is in our house.
He's
those little
cracks,
little cockroaches are more emboldened every day. They think they got it.
My white brother and sister, and yeah, I know you guys are worried too. But like I talked to Todd this morning, and because we talked like a couple times a week. And I asked him, had he heard the show last night? And he said no. And I kind of broke it down as to what, you know, because I don't know if you guys, I'm pretty sure you guys remember those who have been on, you know, the day after the election, my son was attacked by a Trump supporter.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I did not know that. I'm sorry.
And so,
yeah, that was potent.
You know,
sucker.
And so I have brothers that live down south, you know. I have, family that lives down south. I have a legitimate fear that every time I see my son leave the house in the morning, that I may not see him again. That
yeah,
I might get a phone call that says, Ms. Porter, we need to inform you. But, and it's a real... And I don't live my, I'm a Christian, and I have some seriously strong faith. And I don't live in fear. I typically refuse to live in fear. But what we are fighting here is just, it's past Satan at this point.
Oh.
This is just I don't even think Satan can get down this evil.
Yeah, all this stress could be causing this lethargy you're experiencing too.
Yeah, a lot of stress. You know,
Tracy.
Yes.
Can I ask was your son badly injured?
No. He does medical transport, so he was sitting, I forget, somewhere in L.A., and he was just sitting in his car, you know, chilling, you know, waiting for his next pickup, and his window was rolled down, and this guy just walked up to him in the car and socked him a couple of times.
Oh,
and,
no.
You know, and just, you know, Trump and, you know, nigga this and all that. And so.
That's what I mean. You know, that's just messed up. That's messed up.
The worst part about it was the fact that, you know, it just, thank God, you know, he wasn't physically really hurt that badly. He was just, you know, and he called the cops and all that. And they actually caught the guy.
Hell, I mean, I act.
My son didn't press charges. And I'm, and this is, you know, had that happened now, he would have, but, you know, we did not, we did not realize the magnitude of how deep this shit would get, and so, you know, how badly things have changed in the last 2 years, and it's just, it is getting to that point. I mean, it's like when I got pulled over a little while ago, and I think I was actually on the phone with you guys. I was on the phone with somebody. I might have been on the phone with, no, but I got pulled over, and you know, the cop turned out to be cool and everything. But I was still terrified. I mean, I hadn't, you know, I don't like feeling this way. I mean, I don't like feeling that every time, if I get pulled over, that this might, I may never see my family again. I don't like living this way. And, you know, we live with, you know, in a country where, and shit, in the city where Jackie, our district attorney, might as well be, you know, working for the man, because she has yet to prosecute any cops for, you know, shooting unarmed black men, you know. Wow. And so it's just, like I said, it's open season on people. And like I said, I'm the trifecta. I'm gay, I'm a lesbian, I'm black, and I'm a woman. So,
well, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, Tracy, but with yesterday's deal with Barr and the Mueller report, and we got a kind of a preview of it a couple of weeks ago, when he did his 4-page, you know, briefing of what he thought he saw in the report.
What he thought he saw.
Yeah, Trump is going to take this and run with it, but it's not just Trump. He's going to use it politically to say, right. "See, I told you."
He has, yeah.
But
it will
embolden his people.
Yeah, and if I can add to that, it was what, 3 days ago that he declared, "I expect it'll come down to sleepy Joe Biden or crazy Bernie. I can't wait to face either one." And then this part, "May God have mercy on their soul."
Yeah. And you know just as well as you're sitting wherever you're sitting that when they are emboldened this way, they will begin to overstep, or if they're already overstepping, they'll take larger oversteps. That's the scary thing.
Do you guys think it's time for the House to bring impeachment?
That's something
ready to rock and roll myself.
That's something I teed up last night, and I wanted everybody to sleep on it because I would like everyone's opinion.
Oh, well, did you hear Liz Warren? She made an announcement.
But I don't hear what I'm saying. Do we take the high road, and do we do what's morally right and impeach his ass, even though that could risk firing up his base and having another 4 years of this?
Screw his base.
Yeah,
his base is 33%, and I don't want to hold back from our constitutional responsibilities for one, just because it's going to piss a little whiny pieces off.
And what are we teaching our children? You know, you just look the other way when somebody's an asshole.
That's right.
Well,
we can't do that. We can't do that.
Then there's the part of it. If we go that route, given the history of successful and full impeachment and conviction in this country, of which there is none. The closest we came was Nixon, but he preempted.
Well, the closest we came was Andrew Johnson. One sick bastard being hauled in on a stretcher was all that kept him from becoming the ex-president.
Yeah, but my main point is, while we have impeached two presidents, we've never convicted any. Won't going down that road in a way play into their hands? Isn't that what they're expecting?
Yeah, and the Briar Patch syndrome, and that's what scares the fuck out of me. We don't need another 4 years. I don't think we could take
right.
it. So, people are dying.
But the other side.
Just go on.
Hang on a minute.
Hang on a minute, please,
because I mean, we're into the final hour of the program, and I got to get a couple of pieces of information out there because Darlene was kind enough to put a challenge on the table. And it has been, and half of that has been met by Alma.
Alma.
Yeah, and Alma, responding to what the previous topic has been, sent a note along and said, I am thoroughly convinced that my outbreak of lupus lesions and all my other physical issues are a direct result of the 2016 election. My sister died in 2015. The campaign started and I wasn't even started grieving and this horror began. It's still occurring in my thyroid and glands around my neck. It's an outrage that people are suffering with so many physical and mental emotional problems because of this excitement, or because of this excrement, I'm sorry, this excrement in the White House. You're on my mind, Tracy, and all the others in our community.
Thank you, Alma. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Alma.
Thank you, Alma. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Alma. I have a question, though. How would you compare the Trump administration to other great disasters in U.S. history, compared to Civil War, Depression, or, I mean, where does this fit in, like 30, 40 years down the road? Where does this fit in? Worse, Otto, worse,
because in the case of the Civil War, the government functioned. The Constitution itself was saved.
Right.
The Great Depression, the Constitution continued to function. The Cuban Missile Crisis, the Constitution continued to function. The Second World War, Constitution continued to function.
Bob?
But with Trump, what we are seeing, and this is what I've been hammering on, since just about January 20th, if not before, 2017, in fact, I was communicating with our buddy Chris in Germany about this. I'd like to find it because today I actually heard on my filthy morning habit, I heard a guy who used to be a U.S. attorney come on Morning Joe, and he said something. And my pink little ears perked right up because he said what I've been saying for way over a year. That impeachment is not a constitutional crisis. That the constitutional crisis occurs when the Constitution no longer provides remedies to situations in which we find ourselves. And that is where we find ourselves. And that's the reality of what Steve's talking about, for instance, in regard to impeachment. Is there a point to engaging in impeachment if we already know the outcome in the Senate?
Right.
Mitch McConnell won't even pick the fucking thing up, Bob.
I think it's a shall. You know, shall be tried in the Senate. We can look at the clause again. But the thing is, because there is no formalized method of what constitutes trial in the Senate, it can just be everybody for impeachment say aye. Aye. Everybody opposed, nay. And even if you get 60 votes, you're still 7 votes short of conviction.
Mm-hmm. So the key is Bob? The Republican Senate. That's the key to this whole issue.
What do you guys think?
And I don't have any trust.
The only way Nixon resigned was when Republicans in the Senate turned on his ass, and that only happened after the impeachment process started.
Exactly.
When they started having public hearings.
But John, the other thing that goes with that is the only reason Nixon resigned was because Nixon, as awful as he was, still retained a molecule of human shame. Donald Trump does not have that.
He was confronted and he was told he has to go by a top Republican official, and I can't think of his name.
I'll tell you, Steve. Like 2 nights before he announced that he's going to be resigning, Nixon was visited by Barry Goldwater, who was a Republican senator from Arizona, John Rose, who was a high Republican mucky muck in the House, and Senator Hugh Scott, who was a senator, Republican senator from Pennsylvania. And they put it down to him. They said, Dick, you don't have your supporters in the Senate amount to about 15 or 20, which is nowhere near what he needed to prevail in the Senate had he been impeached.
Who's going to be Air Goldwater or Air Scott? Or,
well, and see, that
there is nobody. That's the thing.
There's a couple. Right. There's a they don't carry power right now, but there's a
but
few.
The other thing
but
that
you need
Nixon,
enormous numbers, you know.
The other thing that moved Nixon to resignation and moved the leaders in the Republican House and Senate to let him know what the story was the release of the smoking gun tape, which was irrefutable. That he was in on it from like 5 days after the Watergate break.
And there ain't none of that here.
We don't have any of that.
No.
We don't know that. We don't know that.
And in fact, you know,
going on in the Southern District of New York and in Virginia and stuff, there are still investigations going on there. That's why a lot of that report was redacted, was because of ongoing investigations. We're not going to change the minds of those senators in the Republican House by just forgetting all of this and, well, okay, we're just going to talk about the issue. We can walk and chew gum. We need to deal with health care, with a lot of issues, with HR.
I agree, John, and I am so conflicted over this whole thing, and you know, and well, I've slept on it.
Please. If I could weigh in here, I've got an idea here.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I think with regard to the idea of impeachment, it's not going to happen now. What you need to do is you need to build a groundswell of support for it by having hearings, and you've got to continue to dirty up the guy to the point where his approval rating goes below 30%.
Then
you might have some Senate Republicans desert him and say, hey, we're going to go down to a big defeat in 2020.
There you go.
They want
to save their own ass.
That's the only way it's going to happen.
You have to flip the constituents. You have to flip the constituents.
Yeah.
And that's not
right.
Going
to and to use
it's
a box to use a boxing
district.
To using to use a boxing analogy, what Rick is talking about is, you know, you can't rely on what's called the puncher's chance, that you're just going to slip in a knockout blow. You've got to get in the middle of the ring with him and body blow him until
body blow after body blow
until it begins to collapse him, and then you come in with an uppercut from somewhere back in Arkansas that lands right underneath his chin and looks like Rock'em Sock'em Robots, and his head
there
just goes
go.
Bling.
There you go.
And then he'll go stark raving mad.
I don't care. Let him sit in the corner and play with himself.
That's because, you know, the Mueller report, why do you think that Barr has been going on the 2020 campaign trail with this thing? First, and when he released it, you know, that four-page bullshit was like, no collusion. They weren't even investigating collusion, okay? And so then, you know, so now you got him, you know, running around, no collusion, see, no collusion. So you know, now he gets his base riled up for that. And then the motherfucker comes out yesterday and says, well, you know, I don't see anything about obstruction. And I mean, basically, you know, he's telling people what is in the report without it even being in the report.
They're counting on that.
Yeah, and that's what they're counting on. And so, like Rick is saying, these hearings, the subpoena started flying this morning. It's like, okay, fuck you, Barr. We pay for this shit. Congress pay for this shit. The American people pay for this shit. Who the fuck are you to tell us that we can't see it unredacted?
Maybe try to impeach Barr first, actually.
That's what I was saying.
Maybe try to impeach him first.
We can walk and chew gum.
Let's do them both.
You know, here's the thing. And this is why Bob's show is so important. Because, see, until I had no idea who Barr was. And his shenanigans and hijinks and skullduggery and malfeasance and any other adjective or adverb that I could go throw in there just for good measure. And it's like, this motherfucker has been playing dirty tricks since he probably came. He's got him in diapers.
He's been playing dirty tricks.
You know, he came out of his mama womb saying, bitch, I told you I wasn't ready to come out yet. You know, I'm gonna sue your ass. I was straight chilling, and you're gonna tell me I had to come out? Oh, now we, We got to talk. So
but he doesn't. He does it in the way of the law. He uses the law, the language of the law, to try to do
he
it.
He uses.
He's
the,
not even good at it. That's the thing.
And he's not,
the
and
thing.
This
his arguments don't hold bullshit.
This is what's pissing me off about the Republican, the current state of this government. The motherfuckers are stupid. Okay, they are fucking stupid, and they're doing shit in the open, and the Democrats aren't fucking smart enough to catch them at this shit and nail their asses. What the entire fuck? I'll say this much.
If you really want to catch him and bust him, you got to stop using Republicans to investigate another Republican.
Thank you. That's what you talked about yesterday. Why in the fuck? I mean, do you really think that, you know, during the whole kerfuffle, is that what you call it, when they were investigating Clinton for a fucking blowjob?
Yeah, the cleanest hunt.
You know, to try to find out, who about the goddamn blowjob. She gave him a Hummer. Get the fuck over it. The country's still
we need to
pay.
Take that lesson. The way they shoved it up our ass, let's shove this up their ass.
And
that's
what
I say.
This is what I don't understand.
Don't play games.
Why the fuck Republicans are investigating Republicans? Why are the Democrats? Why do the Democrats sit back and let them investigate? You know, it's like.
The hilarity of it, Tracy, is that even though it was Republicans investigating Republicans, the maggots, because of what this ignorant little punk tweets,
the maggots think it
was 18 angry Democrats.
I thought it was
18 angry Democrats.
Well, I think they all was.
Barr gave cover to Poppy Bush and Oliver North. He's a pro at this, man.
That's what I'm saying.
He's from the old school. Let me point out something that James in Illinois just brought up. And by the way, James just knocked us down to only $40 to go on Darlene's challenge. So there's $40 to go on that. Thank you, James. And right. James refers to something I saw earlier today too. Watch Romney, James says, who is slipping in behind Don with a stiletto.
I wondered about
right.
that.
One of the guys in the Senate that you can easily flip.
Well, okay, so let's play fun with mathematics now, even though we understand how horrible I am at ciphering.
Oh God, here we go.
Here we go with
if you want to win an impeachment trial in the Senate, you're going to have 67 yes votes to convict.
Mm-hmm. Susan Collins.
Yeah. Susan Collins. Yes.
You guys are wrong for that one. Susan Collins.
Or you just keep reminding them they lost their morals, their integrity.
And so, you know, Susan Collins says that she wants Mueller to release Barr to release the whole report. Rob Portman today, Ohio, said he is sickened. Romney said, "I'm disgusted." And if I was a little Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, skipping down the lane, I'd say, "Yay! Look, the Republicans are turning around." But I can't help remembering Bob Corker and Jeff Flake, who became famous for their barrages of rubber-tipped arrows.
Yeah. Well, has anybody
the rubber-tipped
rubber
nuts are
fine?
Has anybody heard from Lindsey? Lindsey Graham? What has he said?
Oh no, Lindsey just wishes it would all go away.
They caught an old film from him when he
Lindsey got the
bitch Clayton.
Look, you know what we have to do, Bob, is we
Democrats' asses are
we have to get the
at this point, okay? From the reaming that we got for, you know, thinking that people are going to help us. I mean, like I sent you that article yesterday from The Root about the whole thing about Barr's press conference yesterday. And I love scrolling down and reading the comments. Mm-hmm. And the comments basically was saying Democrats have to stop thinking that Republicans are going to do shit for us.
They're not going to do nothing, baby.
They are licking. My son is so terrible. Yes, this morning we were talking about the Barr press conference. He said, he's like, "I didn't even realize just how much Trump's balls were in Barr's mouth." He's like, he knows exactly how much salt that Barr ate the other day from licking Trump's the sweat off of Trump's balls. And then I added I said not only the balls, but he had to take some floss to get the pubic hairs out from in between his face.
Oh, how descriptive. Thank you, Tracy. Thank you.
I 19 past the third hour of the program, and we have been there is retching taking place. There's retching taking place in the future by people who haven't heard this yet.
Bob, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, Jim. I hear you. Yeah, Jim, go, Jim.
No, I just want to say one thing. You're talking about civil war in this country and the histories of civil wars and conflicts. What is happening in this country is likened to the War of the Roses in England. And this was a bloodletting operation that the nobility of England performed upon its own self. And basically what we are going to go through until we get this thing over, or quickly enough, is exsanguination of this country. Because I've never seen this nation so divided in my life and in such really clear and present danger. But we are in danger of hemorrhaging, and we don't have any fibrinogen to stop it. We don't even have a tight bandage on it to stop it.
Mm-mm. Yeah, there's no safeguards.
I mean,
and by the way, no, sir. Jim, you sound wonderful. I hope you're feeling as good as you sound. I was thinking about you the other day and wondering how you were getting on, and I hope you're doing better. I thank you, Scott, and I just put up a good front. That's all you can do. And what you do that to the last act, and the curtain falls. Well, all right. And, you know, and I'll tell you, there's one lady that there's one thing I love, and I will never forget her for this. And that's Joan Crawford. And everybody thought she was such a bitch, but Joan Crawford was a great lady. If she was your friend, she was your friend. And I want to point out one thing to you. There was a gay actor named Billy Haynes. He was number 30. He was top in 1930. And he had lived with this guy he met in New York from Ohio. And Louis Mayer called him in his office. He said, "You got to get rid of your lover." And Louis B. Haynes told Louis B. Mayer, he said, "I'll do that when you get rid of your wife." And he fired him. And Haynes was through in Hollywood. But he went on to become the best decorator in Hollywood, made a fortune, and he decorated Joan Crawford's house. She supported him, got him a second career, and made this statement. He said, God damn it. They are the happiest couple in this whole town.
I love the way she was portrayed
in that movie when she said, "Don't fuck with me, fellas." Yeah. And that's the way you have to deal with these people. Billy Haynes' story would make a hell of a biopic.
Yeah.
It would. It's a little-known story. Most people today have no idea who he was. He was a very successful character actor who was out there. Oh, precisely. Yeah. I don't know who to compare him to in today's world, but he was a top-notch character actor, always working, and he was just living in the wrong era. But he took the problem that he had getting ostracized and turned it around and found a second career, and he was fabulously wealthy and successful and probably happier because he didn't need to deal with the Hollywood bullshit.
Right.
Or Louis B. Mayer, who was the biggest asshole in the world. My God. Look what he did to Joan Crawford. He let her go after 18 years. The boy she came back and showed him with Mildred Pierce in 1944.
And Billy Haynes' partner, Jimmy Shields, they were together until Billy Haynes died in 1973.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And Billy and Jimmy, I think, decided he was just going to – I think he may have made it 5 years after Billy's death.
But
look how long it's taken us to realize that he didn't have a problem. It was that we had the problem.
And just as an added bonus, Billy Haynes was a hillbilly.
From Ohio.
No, yeah, Virginia.
Virginia.
Stanton,
Virginia.
Stanton, Virginia, encompasses the Allegheny front. It's the same. Yeah, it's the same county where my Kincaid ancestors first settled when they came here.
And that's what your show pushes, Bob. Just because you live out in the country, just because you live in Appalachia or down in Texas somewhere, that don't make you stupid. Doesn't mean you're out of touch. Doesn't mean you're involved. You're not involved in this shit, baby. All of us need to be involved, no matter what.
John, where you are in Texas, where I am in West Virginia, we've said it before. I'll say it again. There's a real value in simply pushing back against the notion that, for instance, in West Virginia, well, all of y'all support Trump, don't you?
Well, down here in Texas, don't you know we all carry guns and just ready to, just, you know, we all just love Trump. Bullshit. I don't carry a gun, and I hate that sucker. And I try to proclaim all the time that you know, that's what we need. That's how come I try to get as many people as we can to keep talking. You know, we have some that bless their heart, baby, they're not getting very many views. They're not getting very many follows, but they open their mouth. They're loyal to it. They get on Facebook. They speak their mind. And I just encourage anybody that has just the slightest bit of gumption to turn on a camera or just point the picture at a flower and have your voice on there, but speak your mind, baby, and let people know, especially out in these areas that everybody in the world thinks, oh, they're just a bunch of red states. Kiss my ass, we're not red. We're just a not voting state down here. We just need to kick our peoples in the ass and get them out to vote. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Oh, by the way, Tracy, before you go, I don't mean leave, before you say what's on your mind here.
I have to go? Okay, fine.
No, you don't have to go.
I'm just messing with you.
Stop that. before you say what you're about to say, I just have to let you know you got a note. You got a note from Clarity, who says, Oi, good Friday with pubic floss. Thanks for the graphic, Tracy.
There you go. Where else are you going to find such fine entertainment, people?
Oh, and by the way, somebody asked, where's Lindsey Graham? Jimmy in the Great Northwest has the answer. Jimmy says, Lindsey is sipping on some moonshine, and I think he's scared to fall asleep thinking that McCain's going to haunt him. And P.S., Jim, it's good to hear your voice again.
Lindsey's a peckerwood.
Everybody's
Bob.
Happy to hear you, Jim.
Lindsey is a peckerwood, Jim.
No, that's the name of his place. Now, listen, my sister knows him, and that's really? What he calls his summer house. I'm not kidding you.
Calls him what?
It's peckerwood.
Oh.
Well, next sweet time Jesus.
I'm not,
we let her know. We
no,
are
not kidding.
No, I know. I think you're actually serious.
I am serious. Have you ever been? No, really, I am.
Well, yeah, because you don't get to ask, have I ever known you not to be? Because, well, yes. After 15 years, after 15 years, I have known you on occasion to not be serious, but that's okay.
I think this is stone cold serious. His little enclave is okay? Peckerwood.
Peckerwood.
Yes, well, Peckerwood. And it's after, wait, it's not original. It comes from Annie Mame.
Yes, it does come from Annie Mame. You're absolutely
right. That's what she calls Lindsey to his face in his house.
Peckerwood.
Oh, they're great friends. My sister's a fantastic Republican.
Oh, my God.
I can see Lindsey on the veranda in his hoop skirt and his hair curled up with a silver tray with mint juleps on it.
I'll worry about impeachment tomorrow.
Well,
hey, we're at the 30 minutes to go in the program, Mark. We got $40 to go on Darlene's challenge. Please don't let that go by the boards. And that would mean that come Monday, we'll only be dealing with a $595 fundraising goal. So it would be
how much is left on there, Bob?
We got $40 left on the challenge. And then after that, well, after that, another $3.95. But let's get the challenge out of the way at the very least. I've got a note here from Ron and Raleigh, and this is pretty thinky, and it's well worth pondering. How about this? Says Ron. No one has put forth the proposition that people have to go after something or someone that Trump cares about. We know that Ivanka is engaged in all manner of fraud and using the White House to enrich herself. Prosecutors need to go ham on her.
I like his way of thinking.
And her shady dealings. Grill her ass for hours in the House. By the way, ham means hard as a motherfucker. There Make that orange bastard okay. understand that we will send his darling daughter to prison.
Prison. There you go. I like that.
And it's not like they'd have to make anything up to do that.
No.
She's another one that no matter how fabulous she is, when she dies, they're going to have to bury her standing up because she's too crooked to bury laying down.
Oh. Or basically like a husband, you know, they always use a corkscrew for a ruler.
That's his weakness.
Yeah.
That's his weakness.
They all do. And you can't fight those people.
He could give a damn about melanoma.
Yeah.
Oh no!
Or his
no.
two boys.
And the only caveat to what
too stupid.
The only caveat to what Ron has put forward is that I suspect that with the possible exception of him being afraid that she'll finally drop the dime on what Daddy did to her for all those years.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I mean, I do not say this with animosity or ill will. I believe it to be true.
That's what that old boy say about.
I
know,
do too.
I can't prove it, but I just know it's true.
It's
one of those things. You can't prove it, but you know it's true.
What's that? I stepped out.
I suffered for five. Let me see. How long did my stepfather rape me? 6 years.
Oh my God.
Of this, and it's like there's a look. That you have, and because it's like Stockholm syndrome. You begin to identify with this person. You begin to protect this person, and even though you know what he did to you is the most horrific thing that any human being could do to another human being, you just feel like it's your fault. You did something, obviously, you know, you must be a terrible person, because why else would somebody do that to you? So, you know what, I'm not absolving her for the bullshit that she's pulling, but, you know, he's just so fucking creepy. He is just so fucking creepy, and those comments that he made on Howard Stern about how
yes.
high his daughter is. And,
yes.
and I mean,
yeah.
what
she's
comments?
A piece of ass is what she called him.
You
I mean,
know?
He called her.
And so, and back to my question that, you know, about, you know, how we have to do something about him right now. My fear is, come 2020, say that he, you know, that we prevail and we get, and he loses the election in 2020. I just have it in my gut that he will not leave, you know, it will not be a peaceful transition. Thank you. I don't think he will.
Well, there's a lot of debate out there, and there's a lot of reason to think that, Tracy. There's a lot of reason to think that, and he propagates that. He preaches that. It's in his message.
It.
You know, he's got the biker guys. He's got the military. Yeah. It's his narcissistic mind that thinks that everybody's going to run to his rescue. And if I have to believe in my mind that if anything like that happened at all, it would be treated as any other terrorist attack or school shooting or some other bullshit that our law enforcement has to deal with if some morons start trying to pull out their guns.
But here's the problem. The thing is about, you know, law enforcement, you got to think about how many people in law enforcement are Trump supporters.
Yeah. Listen to this, guys.
I like
listen
to think
this.
As many as aren't that would stand by the law.
Well, check this article I'm reading from Think Progress, which the headline itself is a little disappointing, but armed vigilantes apprehend asylum seekers at border. Now, first of all, armed vigilantes, don't you mean armed right-wing terrorists?
That's exactly what it was, and that's exactly what they were doing.
The phrase that I used, because I mentioned that in the filibuster. Excuse me.
Excuse me.
The phrase that I used was Knight Riders.
Yeah, I like that too.
That's what they want to be, Bob. That's exactly what they want to be. And that idiot down there on that newspaper was talking about in his op-ed saying we need more Knight Riders. That guy. You know, well, there's your answer to that shit. You get idiots with guns that go down there and want to think that they're going to uphold the Constitution themselves. Uh-huh. And in the process, shit all over the Constitution.
And their name, incidentally, is, what is it? The Constitution Patriot or something like that.
They always do that.
They're a fascist organization.
The Freedom Caucus. They come up with great names that mean shit.
Yeah.
It's a bumper sticker. It's the same way.
Yeah, they call themselves the United Constitutional Patriots.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the thing is, it's described as being made up of veterans and former police officers, which kind of points towards something that I've been talking about for a very long time, and that is we do not know the degree nor the extent to which law enforcement and the military have been infiltrated and corrupted by fascist fifth columnists from the maggots, whether it's the 3%ers or particularly the Oath Keepers. You know, these are all right-wing hate groups. And if you recall, John, in particular, you remember when that one guy went apeshit and shot some cops in Dallas a couple of years ago?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, one of the cops he shot was tatted up with right-wing neo-Nazi skinhead hate symbology.
The realization that there is just like in our own population, it's a reflection of our population, in our military, in our law enforcement agencies, in our government, it's a reflection of what the population is. Yes, there's going to be a certain degree of asshole, racist, bigoted motherfuckers that are just worthless pieces of shit.
Truly spoken, John. Truly spoken.
Reach out all the time. We can't think that we're ever going to do away with the racism and the bigotry because some cockroach out there is teaching his little baby cockroach that same shit. We need to chase them back into their little holes is what we need to do to where it's not a fashionable thing to wear a MAGA hat or be an asshole in the grocery store to somebody who doesn't speak, you know, perfect English like you want them to, or aren't exactly the same shade of color that you are.
Get a tribal elder.
Yes.
In D.C.
By all possible means.
Yeah. This is a fight, baby. I say it. We are. I got Mousy Clark, which for a lot of older, you know, she's an artist in New Orleans. Her mate is Felix the Cat, and it's, yes, that Felix the Cat that we all remember.
Not Fritz the Cat. Fritz
the Cat. I'm sorry. Not Felix. Fritz the Cat. I'm sorry. Robert Thank Trump. You, Bob. I'm sitting here looking at Mousy's artwork that she sent me, and I have the original one of the original prints signed and all that.
That's so cool.
And it's a It is. And it says, "To the polls, ye guardians of liberty," and it's a statue of liberty with a flag. Oh, it's gorgeous. Anyway, you can't see it. But I've taken that to my heart. We are the guardians of liberty. We are the patriots. Every fight that we've had ever since the beginning, all through the Civil War and all that shit, has been a constant fight.
Yeah, exactly, John, because what people, you know, over on the maggot side of things, well, you just want to get back at him because Bill Clinton. Bullshit.
Yeah, I do.
That's the cherry on top of the whipped cream.
That's right. That's just superfluous bullshit that I'll just be happy about.
But the fact of the matter is, if this goes on, there is a continuum that runs from Ronald Reagan to the present, and if this lawlessness continues, whatever this country is as we begin to go into the worst. To the worst aspects of climate change, it ain't a democracy's going to handle it, and the odds of us not surviving it go up exponentially.
No simple climate change. If we don't come together and work together, it's all bullshit. Who's the president when we all burn up and vaporize and shit like that?
you know, whether it be now or 20 years in the future, or 100 years, how long our democracy will last depends on us.
And let me add this one other thing, John, and it may piss some people off, and if it does, I apologize.
Piss them off.
Oh, and hallelujah, glory, thank you to Ralphs, and thank you to Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy. Darlene's challenge has been met. And it has been exceeded by $10, so we've got $385 to go. That's awesome. Thank you so much to Ralphs and Steve and little Cletus and little, little Twiggy and Miss Karen. But let me add this.
Hey, Bob, just add a $25 challenge for me as well.
Oh, but thank you, Tracy. Thank you so much. So $25 challenge in the remaining 21 minutes of the program. And that'll take us down to $335.
Okay.
And everything.
I meet Tracy's challenge, 25.
Okay, so that's 335. We're done. We're done. But we're down to 335.
How about the rest of the Holland family out there? We need to keep it going because this is just the number for this week. Next week, the number starts over. And that continuous having to ask for it wears heavy on Bob's mind. I know it does. And so we need to get ahead of the curve. So don't stop just because we met a goal or because we met the goal for the evening or the week. It's a continuous process in every dime that y'all donate.
But the beautiful thing is, John, at the end of every month, there's a break. Thanks to our subscribers, this all ends on Tuesday. And the I guess we can just say now, the end of the week is $335. The end of April is $735.
Yeah. See, there you go.
And if we meet that by Tuesday, that's huge. But knocking down more of that 335 this evening makes Monday and Tuesday a lot easier.
There's a lot of people out there listening to this conversation that have learned things, have gotten a laugh, you know, and have been inspired by somebody's story on here. These are the things that keeps this program going. These are the things that keep our movement going and keeping this blue wave that we rose up during the midterms. Keep it rolling, baby. It's what we have
exactly,
to do.
Exactly. And by the way, on something on a strictly selfish note, I know that Agnes would be tickled pink to see us done, maybe even a day ahead, on her, you know, and I'll take her out to lunch for her birthday or something.
There you go.
I think that, yeah.
That would make Agnes happy.
We could start a separate. Let's send Bob and Agnes out to eat fun for their birthday.
There you go.
I like to think outside of the box, man.
I'd do that. My wife wouldn't go out anyway. She'd send me out to go get Whataburger.
Well, that's because you have a Whataburger, John. Don't rub it in.
We do. Yeah, but it's 20 miles away, Bob. That's 40 miles for a hamburger. My fries are cold.
Yeah, my Whataburger's 700 miles away. Fuck off, okay?
We got no excuses.
I can get on the road right now. I can go down the mountain. I can get on I-64 west to Huntington, take it all the way to Lexington, Kentucky, get on the Bluegrass Parkway to Elizabethtown, get on I-65 to Nashville, then get on I-40 west to Jackson, Tennessee, and pick up U.S. 45, I think it is, all the way down the east side of Mississippi and get to Gulfport, Mississippi.
Oh,
and that's my nearest Whataburger burger. So piss off, John.
Closest one to spot?
Yeah.
I'm going to buy one.
Shit, you went right past my house. You better stop and see me, peckerhead.
I didn't go anywhere. That's nowhere near your house, Steve.
No Trader Joe's.
Well, fairly
close. I got no Trader Joe's. I don't even ever seen a place in my life. No Trader Joe's where I'm at.
Trader Joe's. I hear about y'all talk about them all the time. Down here in Texas, we do have Buc-ee's. If you've never been to a Buc-ee's, it's a great little, it's a tourist destination.
Hell, I've been to H-E-B one time, and I was just thrilled.
Oh, I love my H-E-B.
H-E-B reminded me more than anything else of Publix.
If it has to do with Texas taste, it's an H-E-B. And we try to get every
other flavor. H-E-B.
But without a doubt, the coolest grocery store I've ever been in, and it was last summer while I was down on the Gulf Coast, is Rouse's out of Louisiana. Rouse's. That place is awesome.
I don't know that one. When I lived in Louisiana, it was the big store was Swagman's.
There's a Rouse's in New Orleans. There's one in Mobile, and I mean among other things, you know those long baguettes they use for po' boys,
yes.
The real ones.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, they got those in Rouse's.
Oh, man.
For
See,
anyone.
That's what I hate down here in Texas is there's a place here in Texas. I won't call down here where I live in the city. And they brag about their poor boys on TV, on their commercials and all that shit when I first got down here 40 years ago. I don't know, the TV, I'll go down there and try. Are you shitting me? That's not a poor boy. That's a, what is that? That's a sandwich on a bun. You know, that's the bread is the whole thing. The baguette, the French bread. That's what makes that poor boy.
Oh, yes, it does. Yeah. Yes, it does.
And that
flakiness to that crust and, you know, crispy and crunchy on the outside and light and fluffy on the inside. And there's all them shrimp and oysters and tomatoes. Yeah.
Shut up. Here we go with the food porn. Let's talk about shiny honey instead.
Yeah, let's don't say we didn't. I am going to go back to this topic, though. I'm going to go back to this. And by the way, anonymously, we are now down to $285 to go to finish the evening.
That's awesome.
I can't stress that enough, how thankful that Bob is. I know he is. Because, you know, we're in this, you know, it's the same thing. You want to continue on every day. The voice is so important. The program like Bob's is so important to everybody. So, yes, keep that momentum going because it comes in every month. And this is Bob's job. This is it. This is what Bob does for a living. So,
And
tip well.
Thank you, John. Thank you. Because it is. I'm going to go back to the constitutional issue in a minute, but we've got to deal with the pressing matters of state right now. Jimmy wants to know what's the best burger, Whataburger or Bob's Big Boy? Whataburger by a mile.
I live in Texas. I eat Whataburger all the time.
On the other hand, if you want the best burger on earth, bar none, period, forget about it. You got to get there. You can't get there very late. I think they shut down by about 2:00, but in East Florence, Alabama, there's a place called Staggs's Grocery.
Oh yeah,
and they've been doing the same hamburger, the same sort of way, for at least 60 years.
See, a lot of them places like that, Bob. They've the best food that you're ever going to get.
Yeah, and they've never had any urge for like a second location or anything like that. It's in a rundown part of Florence. In the oldest part of Florence, and they got a grill in there, and they patty out their burgers by hand from somebody that grinds it there. They're not using rolls of meat from Walmart or anything like that. And they're big ass burgers. They patty them out, and they fry them on the griddle, and you know, turn them once, and there's a nice char on both sides. They salt them and pepper them on the grill. And then they scoot them to one side, and they toast the buns in the hamburger grease.
There you go. Ooh. When I grew up a lot around New Orleans, Metairie, and all that. Kenner. I lived in Kenner for a while, and when I got older, and moved to Slidell and whatnot, we found this place over there. It was a gas station of all places. They had the best poor boys, and I mean, when I got older, and people would come to New Orleans and they'd want a poor boy, I'd drive 25, 30 miles across the bridge over there to take them over to Slidell to that gas station. If you want a poor boy, this is what it is.
Exactly. Same thing with a little cinder block gas station on the Maryland-Pennsylvania border, north of Baltimore. And it's right before you go into PA. Doesn't look like nothing. They got two really old-fashioned gas pumps outside. I found it by accident, and I had the most badass crab cake sandwich in my entire life and a cup of the most beautiful creamy she-crab soup you're ever going to eat.
I'm telling you.
When you find those places.
Yes, because in 1981, Bob, my wife and I, we drove from Texas down here. I was stationed in Norfolk. When I was discharged in Norfolk, on our way back, we stopped. It was either in Virginia or West Virginia. I don't know. It was the middle of the night when we stopped, stayed at a little motel there in this little town, got up the next morning, and across the street was this little restaurant. I said, big breakfast for, you know, it was like $2 or something like that. And I said, well, shit, you know, I'm hungry. Let's go. Are you shitting me, Bob? We have in our cedar chest somewhere in there is the menu from that place. Because I paid little or nothing, and I mean, I got eggs, bacon, ham, sausage. Mm-hmm. There was grits, biscuits, and gravy. I mean, this spread was like
same thing. Same thing
ridiculous.
Happened.
And the thing they were getting the eggs and the ham right out in the backyard, buddy. That was coming in from the backyard where they.
Oh yeah,
them.
Same thing happened to Agnes and me and Chris from Germany. On the way to Malloy Fest 1, we had overnighted in Commerce, Georgia. And got up the next morning looking for some, and it was just this little divey-looking place by the side of the road, but you had to have a shoehorn to wedge your car into the place to park.
Boy,
and went in there, and they it was buffet cafeteria style. I want some of that and some of that. No, more cheese grits. And it was bacon and hickory smoked sausage and sausage gravy to die for. Wasn't none of this out of the can shit.
The highway,
there's a little old blue-haired lady in the back with a hairnet on and making sausage gravy. And
if you're
it
looking
was
for that big,
magic.
Flashy sign, you're missing some of the best food in the world. If you're not looking for one of them flashy restaurants where they're gonna serve really good food and it's real clean and everything else, and it's five stars and all that, some of the best food you're ever gonna find is gonna be in little spots on the side of the road by somebody who's been doing that same cooking for 20 years or whatever, and everybody around them still loves the shit.
And Steve in New York says Lindy's by the Red Lion, or Lindy's by the Red Line, by 2000 Penn Shopping Area by my alma mater in D.C. at George Washington University. Lots of grease and made to order. The real best burger.
We all have a place.
But here's the thing. The real best burger from my grill, says Steve. I don't mind bragging that my burgers are the best.
Hey,
Bob. My son's going through that right now.
Next time you're in D.C., you and your friends owe it to yourselves to make a side trip to Alexandria for breakfast to a place on Duke Street. Duke Street and I think Diagonal Road is the intersection. It's called Table Talk. And for years, it was owned by a man named Mohammed, who had come to this country in the late 60s, early 70s from Iran and bought this place. And there, back then, they were only open for breakfast and lunch, called Table Talk. My mom and dad used to go there in their retirement years every morning for breakfast, and they have the best breakfasts that you can get. Now, I haven't been there for some years, and I believe he sold it, but I understand the quality has stayed consistent. Table Talk on Duke Street. It is well
worth. I know that place, Doc.
Okay.
I know that place. I've been there.
Okay. Well, you know what I'm talking about. Mo was one of the nicest people you'd ever want to know, and you never knew who you would find there. I remember on a trip back to D.C. once in the late 80s, early 90s, my wife at the time and I and my parents and some others were all at this big table, and you looked across the room and sitting there reading his newspaper, sipping his coffee and eating his breakfast was Marlon Fitzwater. There's a name from the past.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Lord.
The presidential spokesman. But, yeah, I mean, and people would, you couldn't get a seat some mornings because the place was so popular. But I'm telling you, it's worth a trip over there once just to get a hearty breakfast.
Yes, Lord.
My goodness. And, by the way, Texas T just chimed in. Texas.
Uh-huh. Jim,
where did
you
say? I'm sorry.
No, it's okay, Jim. You were saying to Scott what?
I said, Scott, you bring back some memories, and I want to thank you, Scott, for your well wishes. And I also want to say before I lose this, John Bonavo, you've got a goat,
yes,
too. I love your goat, too. She's wonderful. And I want to thank you for your service. I want to thank you for your past service and also for your current service. I think it's wonderful what you're doing down there. I really do.
It just warms my heart.
You gave me a second shot in the arm. You really did.
Well,
you did a lot. You did a lot for me.
Well, I appreciate that.
I won't forget that.
I appreciate it.
See, Uncle John, this is a wonderful life trip.
It's
It really is.
I never expected anybody to even listen to me in the first place.
With a set of pipes like that, John, you could read the ingredients on a toothpaste tube, and people would tune in.
Tell my wife that.
Jim, tell her
I'm handsome and sound good and all that good stuff.
Jim, are you kidding?
It ain't going nowhere.
I ain't gonna mix it up with Mrs. Blue Dot. I ain't crazy. I'm born at night, not last night. Mama didn't raise no dummy.
I'm lucky to have had her for 42 years now, and I'm tickled to death. But you know, every rant I've done from the beginning of this to the one I did today. And if you watch today, you'll notice that I tossed my handbook away because I had to do my show the third take before I got it. And I was wore out. And instead of doing a rant, I just put my notebook down and spoke just from my heart. So every rant I do and every time I get on, it's just coming from how I feel. And I want to bring back that corny-ass feeling. It's patriotic, baby, to save your country. It's patriotic to stand up for your country. And if we don't do that, we lose, baby. And we can't lose this shit. What are we, 242 years?
We're halfway down the crapper now. That's what's so just hard.
Well, we got to reach up and grab the rim, baby.
Because
we can't let this go.
And hey, John, Texas T checked in a minute ago to let me know. He said, John is talking about Bill Miller's.
Yes, Bill Miller's. That's right, down here in Corpus Christi. Now, don't get that mixed up with Miller's Barbecue, because that's not the same thing. That's a chain. Bill Miller's Barbecue, you damn right. I talked to him on my show. He was kind enough to call in on the other day. He's a real fine gentleman, and we appreciated him calling in and having part of the discussion. But, yes.
Now, you said Miller's Barbecue is a chain. I went to a standalone place that wasn't a chain. I guess it was 4 or 5 years ago now. Dr. Allen took me my one trip to Texas. Called Miller's Barbecue in Belton.
In Belton?
Yeah.
Belton's an old town. It's a really nice town.
It was beautiful. It was gorgeous. This was a place just off the square, and they had opened up originally as a meat cutting facility for people who brought in their game to have it butchered. And then they expanded into sausage, and somebody talked them into smoking some brisket one day, and the rest is history. I've even got a Miller's Barbecue of Belton, Texas T-shirt.
There you go. There you go. Cool. Our family reunions.
Oh, man, I bet you cherish that, don't you?
And I lost my train of thought, but the Miller thing. I'm beginning to think that chain of Miller's Barbecue is trying to take the name off us, because it seems like there's a lot of Millers that are making barbecue. But that's a distinction down here, is there's a difference between Bill Miller's and Miller's Barbecue.
Where is Bill Miller's?
Bill Miller's is here in Corpus Christi.
Yeah, but whereabouts? I used to live down there.
It's on Staples. They moved. Their original location was down on Padre Island Drive, if I'm not mistaken. But then the south side started growing, and I think they're out on Airline or Staples. I can't remember.
I think I've been there.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I have.
It's a world of difference from going through the drive-through at the Bill Miller Barbecue and getting what everybody else is having there, and it tastes like shit.
John, may I ask a favor?
Sure, bub.
I would like to. We've heard from everybody except my buddy Duncan. I'd like to. Are you out there? Can you check in? Or
I'm here.
Sparky, how you doing, brother?
I'm sitting here.
Sparky's been sparking it up, I imagine.
No, not today. Not today.
I just wanted you to check in, man. It's just
I was busy at the beginning of the show. My menu was on Easter break, and he come over here today from Cottonwood, where he lives now, and help me out.
Ain't it nice when you're not there, we worry about you, Sparky.
You pressure washed my patio that needed really looking bad, needed this concrete, needed cleaning off and everything.
Send his ass over to my house.
And then, when he got that done, he comes out and asks me, he says, can I cut some roses for my mom, because it's her birthday tomorrow?
Oh, bless his heart. I hope you told her yes.
Cut away. Yes.
Yeah.
His name's Mason. He's 13 years old.
Oh, there you go.
Well, he sounds like he's raised right, and you've kind of had a hand in that, Sparky.
Well, great man. He used to live across the street, but they moved to Cottonwood, which is like 15, 20 miles north of Red Bluff, into a bigger house. They bought more, got more land and everything, and his dad's going to build a shop for his trucks and stuff. Right. But anyway, he made up the most beautiful rose display. We had some extra glass vases that Judy got from other flower arrangements that come. She made it all up, and I went outside when his mom works just about a half a mile from here for a big outfit that does road closures and stuff for PG&E, and they're all union IBEW utility workers.
Nice.
But anyway, she come by in a company truck to pick him up at 4:30. I said, "Have you ever seen a vase like that before?" She goes, "No, this is better than a flower arrangement from a flower shop." I said, and he did it all by himself.
Well, good for him.
I got a question for Sparky.
We got a memorial garden out there. We call it now a memorial garden because I got two posts out there with metal sculptures my dad had made. One's his name. Wow. He made a sculpture of my mom's name with two spark plugs on either side holding up spark bug people holding up her name. So after they passed away, we put the sculptures on top of wooden posts, and we buried some of their ash right between the two posts.
Outstanding.
That's why we call it the Memorial Garden. We got two rose bushes out there, we got a lavender plant, and we got some other flowers out there. They're all blooming because of the rain. I mean, it's all overgrown and looking.
You're painting a pretty picture, Sparky.
Full of bees, too. There's bees all over the place getting on that lavender plant. And then there's another plant called Jonathan's Beard or something. And I mow it down, and it grows back every year. And it's got a big red bloom on the top of it. And the bees just love it.
Well, I'm glad the bees are vibrant up there, because I worry about the bees. But you mentioned
Scott. There's orchards all over the place up here.
Oh, yeah.
Bees out everywhere.
You mentioned the other day something about AT&T stock. Did you ever work for AT&T?
No, uh-uh.
Oh, okay.
I was an inside lineman, inside wireman in the IBEW.
Okay. Because I used to work for a couple of the local telephone companies back when AT&T owned everything before the divestiture. And you mentioned AT&T, and I wish I'd hung on to my AT&T stock and my Apple stock.
I'll tell you how I got the stock.
Yeah. Okay.
My grandfather bought the stock when it was American Telephone and Telegraph or something.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Way back.
Way back. Had the stock. And then my mom inherited it when he passed away. And then when my folks passed away, my sister took the stock and split it in three parts. So my other sister has shares, I have shares, and she has shares. And so we hung on to it because it's like $75 every 3 months dividend, but heck, it's money.
Well, AT&T.
Pay my house insurance.
The old AT&T used to be what they call a widows and orphans stock. It never, the share price never went tremendously high, but you could always count on that damn dividend, you know? But man, I think about stock that I've owned, not much of it, but over the years, back in the 80s, I had 3 shares of Apple stock. And I think I bought it somewhere in the low to mid 60s. And I hung on to that damn stock for 3 or 4 years. And it was at probably the worst time to own Apple stock because Jobs was gone. But then they brought him back, and I sold it before they brought him back. And man, I wish I'd hung on to those shares because they've split and they've doubled back and split again. and Jesus, boy, I'm...
Might be 50 or 60 shares by now.
Oh, God, yeah, and what, I don't even check the price anymore because it makes me cry.
Amazon stock will even make you sicker. If you could get in a time machine and go back to 92 and purchase it when he was just selling books out of his garage to where it is now, there's no telling how many millionaires that has made.
Well, if I had a time machine,
but my AT&T,
we could fix
if
everything.
If I had a time machine, I would kill Hitler. Okay,
Would you kill baby Hitler?
I would put on my Sunday best and try to seduce Mary Trump and get her away from Fred for a few weeks.
Dude, have you not seen that Twilight Zone episode where the guy tries to stop the assassination of Lincoln?
Oh, I know.
No, don't even. Just don't even.
Yeah.
Hey, look, we've run over by a couple of minutes. But I have to throw out a huge thank you to Stephen. Thank you so much, Stephen. We came up with y'all came up with everything but $85 for this evening. So Monday is just $285, just normal practically. That is huge. So thank you, Darlene, for getting us started with the challenge. Thank you to Alma and James. Thank you very kindly to Ralps and Steve. Thank you to our anonymous friend. Thank you to Tracy for the challenge. Thank you to Billable Rick for answering it. And thank you to Stephen. This is that, well, it's another one of those community made front porch miracles. And I can't say enough for that.
Make another one next week.
And I'll save my constitutional rant on the Clinton impeachment for like Monday or something. But
Bob, can I say something?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, you got a bit, Jim, you can. But I have to tell you, you got a note from Alma, who said, "Please let Jim know that I have felt an affinity to him ever since I heard his voice. Best wishes to him and his health. He's contributed so much meat to our community that he is invaluable." Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Jim. Signed, hey, Alma.
Hey, listen, let me tell you, folks. I know what it's like to be down, and I know what it's like to have to claw your way to the top. And I say this, I say it to Tracy, I say it to Clarity, I say it to anybody who's having problems with their health or whatever. Just my very best, and to everybody else, if you can't run, then you walk. If you can't walk, you crawl. Even if you have to crawl across the finish line like that Marine did at the Boston Marathon.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Indeed,
adapt,
Jim.
Adapt and overcome, baby. Keep going.
Wise
One
words.
One foot in front of the other. Thank you, Jim.
Yes. Yeah, don't give up.
Well, a person who was much wiser than I am once said, even a crippled finger can point the way.
Bob, can I give a shout-out?
That's good.
I don't know why it's
so... What's that, Sparky? What?
I want to give a shout out to Greg 2002. He's an old time.
Oh yeah, from way back, Greg.
Way back before we ever did Friday on the Front Porch, and I heard there's a rumor that you let them hijack our horn chat room for Malloy.
Well, they wandered in. I had the chat room open last night. I always keep it open when I'm doing Malloy.
Oh, okay. I just heard a rumor that you sold out to them.
Sold out?
Well, because their chat room was getting hijacked or something else. I don't know.
Malloy no longer has a chat room, does he?
So, no, I was filling in for Malloy last night, and they wandered in, and I said, howdy.
How? Ain't nobody here anyhow. What's it going to hurt, man?
Yeah. Nothing, but I just wanted to give a shout.
Yeah, I know. Duncan just being ornery.
Wow, I got to share
He's
one
an
more email.
Old-timer in my book.
Yep.
Yeah.
Known God, how long have we known Greg? Way back.
Oh, good. Duncan and
10 plus years, something like that.
Greg and Irish Dave. Shit, man, this goes way back, man.
That's how long this voice has been carried on.
All y'all are just gold.
That's persistence, baby.
There's nothing but nice people here, because if an asshole shows up, we weed him out.
There you go. There you go.
It's you kind of know who the asshole is.
Yeah, we wield the weed eater of common decency.
It's called a mutual defense society.
It's simplistic, but it works well, you know.
It's hard to pretend you're a right winger after a while. People kind of like, oh, come on. You're fibbing.
Oh, and let me oh, by the way, I got some bad news for Steve in New York. I got a note from Renee. And Renee said, sadly, Lindy's is closed. But Renee agreed with Steve and said it was every bit as good as he said. Renee said, I would get the, let me see if I can pull it up here. I'd get the Acapulco. It was a veggie patty with mushroom, jack cheese, and jalapeno peppers. And damn, that sounds good enough. I'd eat it.
I'd eat it too. I'd threw them jalapenos. I was there.
Yeah,
I'm
right
there.
And then this from Carolyn from the Pacific Northwest. This is a periodic reminder of what this community is and can be. Carolyn says, your show really touched a nerve tonight. For the last 2 weeks, I've been suffering from shingles. Oh, Carolyn, I'm so sorry.
That's
a nightmare.
God, indeed.
Carolyn says, I blame the stress from this band of mobsters destroying our country. I wish I was more adept at the internets, but I prefer the U.S. Postal Service. Therefore, going to drop a check in the mail tomorrow for $200 to cover Monday's program.
Outstanding. Oh, wow. Outstanding. Wow. That's really stepping up there. That is really great. We appreciate that.
That's huge, Carolyn. Thank you.
Shingles. That is brutal. God,
yes.
Shingles.
You have the thoughts of every human being in this community as you battle through that.
God.
Oh, I watched my dad go through it, and he had permanent neuropathy out of it.
Oh no.
But you know, there's a shingles vaccine now.
Yeah.
I got it. I was sick for about 2 days because I think I took a tough reaction to it.
Yeah,
but it
now
worked.
You don't have to worry about it again.
It
let's
worked.
Just do the best to take away the stress that's causing that for her.
Let's do that. Get active, stay active, do what you
that's
can.
Resist and persist, baby. That's what it's all about.
Indeed. And you know how I feel about H.R. 2050, the AIC Act, what Darlene did with her member of Congress. Is exactly what we need to do. You know, you want to see a climate change bill passed? Push H.R. 2050. You want to see an environmental justice bill passed? Push H.R. 2050. You want to see a Green New Deal bill passed? Push H.R. 2050. And we can get it there. And every victory goes in the W column, and every victory is a little bit closer to that day that we can reclaim the future of this country from the toilet bowl that it's presently in.
There you go. Amen, Bob.
So thanks to all of you. This has been, and they all are, all of our Friday on the Front Porch conversations are magnificent. So let me just thank Tracy and Otto. Suman was in for a little bit, didn't get to hear from him. Thank you to Christopher. Thank you, Darlene. John Britovo, thank you. Thank you, Billable Rick. Steve from Georgistan, you remain an all-around great guy. Thank you to Irwin for jumping in. Thank you, John in Central PA. It was a wonderful conversation. Thank you, Jim. It was awfully good to hear from you, and I'm glad you sound like you're getting stronger every day. And I'm just so doggone glad to know you're home.
Well, thank you. Well, I appreciate it.
And with all of that having been said, thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you, Sparky, for all the years with the Friday on the Front Porch conversation moderation. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia, for all your technical assistance. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years, day in, day out, never flagging, never faltering, at the very forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all, and have a wonderful weekend.